Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And again, alongside me, there's my good friend Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. And, you know, I'm sorry. I'm starting to laugh again because, Bob, you're going to have to back me up on this. I'm just thinking about the call that Alex got a moment ago.
Yeah, we're getting some crazy calls already this morning before we started.
You owe that guy money.
I think he's had a couple too many drinks.
Somebody was calling in and getting all over Alex and telling Alex he owes him for the playlist and you owe him money. at 5:30, it's killing me.
5:30, I have to owe him money. And I'm still on my first cup of coffee. I need to wake up first.
I'm sorry. It's stuff like that that I really get a big kick out of.
Oh, it made our morning already because, you know, and we got a great show. We got a lot of fun stuff today.
We got a lot of stuff lined up today. But good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Okay.
Can you believe we're in the middle of February already?
Yes. I can. And last week was a crazy week. Just the other day, Thursday, Valentine's Day.
We were telling
all the guys to get ready for last Thursday. So I hope that none of you are in the doghouse.
How'd you do?
We did well.
What'd you? No. I'm not talking about that. Business is business. I'm talking about how did you take care of Tina?
Oh, you know, we really didn't do much. But Tina got me a darling of a card.
Oh.
Yeah. It was humorous. I like that. I like cards that are humorous.
You like the funny cards?
Yeah.
I do too. Did you get her anything?
No, I didn't.
Oh my goodness. When's her birthday?
October 6th.
All right. Well, we'll have to come up with some other holiday then.
I take care of Tina. I think that I do. I do my best.
Do you?
I think that I do.
You know what? I'm gonna have to call her and ask her. I might have to do that later in the show.
You might have to.
I'm gonna have to find out how it went.
You might have to do just that.
I guarantee you, next time I see her, maybe next week for sure, when I see her, I'm gonna ask her.
She'll shrug it off. I mean, yeah, she's pretty resilient.
She's tough. Tough woman.
Yeah, she doesn't.
Anybody that can put up with Tony Works has to be a tough woman.
You know, you're absolutely right. I can be a little demanding. I don't know about demanding, but kind of a little OCD sometimes.
Well, that's all right. We all have our thing.
But,
and I told you I was trying to figure out something for Elizabeth, what to get her.
What did you do?
So, I took her to dinner. So we went to dinner, which was great. And it's just us two, which was even better. So, we actually had a nice conversation. But she's always wanted a body pillow. The whole, a whole big long body pillow.
You couldn't fill that position?
Well, I did. So I got it for her. But this thing was like 5 feet tall. It's almost as big as she is. So it's huge. So, I tend to go overboard on, if I buy something and like, bigger is better. I don't know. I mean, this thing was enormous, man.
Does she carry it around the house with her now?
No, like, she doesn't have to do that.
But I'll
tell you what, I don't know if she needs a mattress anymore. This thing's huge.
Wow.
I did flowers a couple weeks before from Jackson Flora. Right. So, we joke, we were telling all these guys they need to do all these things, but I guess we've been married so long that sometimes we take it for granted.
You know, we need to stop for a moment and, just do some things with our spouses or our significant others. There's no doubt about it. I think sometimes we do have a tendency, both men and women, to just kind of take some things, not really for granted, but just you're not thinking about that, but we need to stop for a moment and just do
we do. And the good news is if you messed up Thursday,
there's always flowers you can get to get out of the doghouse.
You can still get flowers and bring it up late. Or with spring coming, there's going to be a lot of annuals out there because we're not that far from it. So, there's a lot of things that you'll be able to do and maybe not do it on a holiday where you can surprise her, So we'll see if we can come through with that and help.
We'll be all right. So what's going on up in your neck of the woods over there at the nursery? What are you guys kind of digging into?
The weather's been awful. So it's been terrible. But good news. Mm-hmm. I mean, it actually starting to feel like spring at Bard's because all our little baby plugs started coming in. Every single one of our hanging baskets that we grow, not everyone, but about 95% of them are all potted and planted. And we'll see maybe if we can get a couple pictures up on the Facebook just to see what they look like. And then as they progress, maybe I can get some more so people can see it.
There you go.
But they're little babies. I sent you a picture. They're babies.
Who's the head grower over there? Clint, is Clint the head grower? Your dad?
No, he's not.
You looked at me real funny.
No, he's not. You know, when it comes to annuals, it's my lovely wife and sister-in-law, Elizabeth and Teresa. They take care of the annuals, and they set the mixes and what we're ordering, what's growing, right. And what.
There's a lot of work behind all
there
that.
Is. And
there
I put some pressure on them this year because I think I had mentioned before we're doing some different soil mixes. So I'm doing a massive trial of different soil mixes.
Right.
About maybe 8 or 9 different types. You know, so I'm going to find out what's growing better. And I started mixing them up yesterday and helping them kind of fill the pots. Some of them are really peaty. Some of them are really barky. It was really amazing. You know, you think you buy a bag of dirt and the technology that it's going into these and how they're mixing different things to make things healthier and better right. roots. It's kind of crazy. So it'll be interesting to see how the trial goes.
That would be a great subject right there in itself, just some of the soilless mixes. And when we talk about soilless mixes, just as what Bob stated, you know, a lot of those really have a lot of peat moss in them.
Mm-hmm.
It's lighter in weight and a little bit of perlite, you know, a little bit of bark in them, some of those mixes. They all vary. But that's what most of you will find when you go to the garden centers and nurseries when you buy plants in 4-inch pots, 6-inch pots, and so forth. Most of those are planted up in those soilless mixes, and that really confuses people sometimes.
Yes, it does.
It's not really a heavy mix, and I'm a fan of peat moss. I like peat moss. It just makes for things in the growing environment. A lot better, you know, you get a lot better root development, water permeation, you know, the roots develop better in that type of a mix. And it's even more important that you use some of those products in your own mixes at home and in your own containers.
It's really been interesting as we poured the soil into the pots, seeing the different consistency. And like some of them were almost all peat, mm-hmm. you know, which is really interesting. So, you know, because they're all going to get watered pretty much the same as well, because where we're putting them is we're actually doing it as a test that go right along the front fence of our garden center, and there's about 20 pots. So there's going to be all different types. So we're going to know with the same growing conditions as far as amount of sunlight, the same plants, the same pot, everything exactly the same. The only difference
is the soil.
So we're going to really do a cool test to find out what did well, what didn't well. I may have some I may have to get rid of that didn't do well at all. Some of them may explode and do. It's going to be interesting to watch over the summer, and I'll try to kind of document some of it, take some pictures.
Whose soil is this that you're using? Whose soil do you primarily use?
This is a lot of this is ProMix.
ProMix?
Type soils,
mm-hmm.
which I used to use 20 years ago, kind of got away from. It's going to be compared to some of the old Fafford mixes, which now has been bought up and switched around, but the
part
same
of SunGrow,
stuff.
Right?
SunGrow bought them, but then there's another one called Jolly Gardener,
mm-hmm.
which we love the soil. The gentleman who developed Fafford soils went to that company after Fafford got bought.
So
he just moved on. So all the same things match up. So we used to have one called, 44 Mix, and, you know, they're all very similar. So one used to be CB Mix, and you know, they take all these mixes, and they're basically the same thing. They just slightly change the name.
Right. And what Bob's referring to is, from a growing standpoint, these are the names and terms that you typically hear and see in the industry. Now, on the other hand, you as a consumer, when you're buying various baked goods, you don't always necessarily see those.
Right.
Some garden centers will make those available to the public, but not many. But it's primarily for growing.
It's mainly for growing. We'll sell our mixes. We do sell those just because if I'm willing to use it, I think I want to tell my customers to use it. But there's really some good soils, and maybe that's something even you and I can try coming up, because I know there's certain ones that you like. You and I could even try a little trial, either your place or mine, and just see which ones do well.
You know, just the other day, I was showing you the Fox Farm products.
Yeah, the Happy Frog.
Happy Frog.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Happy Frog right there.
But it was amazing how different they were in two different bags.
Yeah, you even thought that, what mix did you think that most represented or was close to?
There was two of them. One was real peaty, and, you know, I kind of thought that one was a little more like Fertilome.
Right.
And then there was the other one, which was a little more like the ProMix and the Fafford, because it had a little more perlite and, you know, vermiculite. It looked like it was a little lighter and fluffier even than the peat moss.
Well, we'll talk more about that when we come out of the break. 749-B105 in and around the house. And maybe we just might continue the discussion with soils and some of the differences and so forth. And give us a moment. and we'll join you in a couple minutes. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we've kind of started off the morning here just talking a little bit about soil mixes. And kind of wasn't on the agenda, but I think it's an interesting topic, to say the least, Bob. And before we went into the break, I was asking you what you thought about some of those Fox Farm products. And we saw a lot of Fertilum soil. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites. We've been selling that one for a long, long time. I don't know if you quite use it or not, but, you know, we all have our own different mixes and ideas about soil.
To me, the Fertilum is, it's a good product. I quit selling as much of it only because of how peaty. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot more peat in it than I was used to. And we grow in the mixes we sell as well. So
right.
With our watering system, it made it very difficult. So, and that's something that the homeowner is going to find as well, that maybe Happy Frog works really well for one, and the neighbor next door, it may not. You know, it just depends on watering. It depends on, you know, what they're putting in it. There's mm-hmm. a lot of things that it makes a big difference with, you know, and I know you've got like orchid, you've got a bunch of different soils out there. Like you have orchid soil, you have, you know, I think there's
African
like,
violet mixes. Yeah. We have orchid mixes, different bark mixes. We have, gosh, you know, we saw a lot of cactus mix too.
Mm-hmm.
We really do. And that has it's a heavier base type of soil.
Got
because
more sand,
it has
right?
more sand in it, mm-hmm. right, for drainage. So a lot of these various soils that you see, they are specifically engineered and kind of geared towards a plant and its like ideal environment or soil, its growing conditions. So that's why you'll find those various types of soils at your local garden centers and nurseries. And, you know, don't skimp when it comes to soil, especially with your containers and your window boxes. And that's what we're really talking about. And we'll take it a step further when we talk about planting trees and shrubs and perennials. But your containers, you know, that's so, so important. That's the foundation. If you put that heavy, cheap 99 cents for a 20, 40-pound bag that you find at the big boxes into those containers, that's the kind of performance that you get.
You're getting what you pay for. And you know, yes, they're cheaper, but, you know, they have weed issues. They don't put the time and energy into making sure that you're not getting weeds. You also don't know 100% exactly what's in there. I mean, they're mixing stuff up, throwing it right in the bag. You know, you're getting 99 cents worth of soil. That's what you're paying for. And your plants will perform like it, too.
Oh, they will. And typically, those heavier base soils, they'll stay wet longer. And that's not a good situation to put your annuals in or your perennials or whatever it is you're planting with. You know, plants do not want to sit in that kind of an environment.
I've seen gravel come out of those bags, pea gravel mixed in with soil. I've seen all kinds of
things mixed
in. I've
seen weeds I couldn't identify. I've never seen before. They were from another part of the United States.
Right, and it kind of goes back to some of like the compost and topsoils and Michigan peats that you see kind of from Garden Magic is one brand that carries those. You know, and I really like them, and I think you do too. You know, but they're sterile, so they're not going to have the weeds. They're blended with peat and a little bit of other products in there to make sure that you're getting quality. Are you paying more for it? Yeah. Are you getting more? Yes, you are.
Now, you know, I like Michigan peat's topsoil, and it has just a little bit of sand in it, which is okay. I mean, I'm not advocating, hey, you got to plant with sand, because you really don't want to do that.
And you really
time.
Can't tell
no,
that it's in
you
there.
You can't tell. You have to really look. But I like to take that and mix it 50-50 with the Fertilum, the ultimate potting mix.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get that blend, going back to what you were saying, you know, sometimes you had a hard time keeping some of those peat-based products kind of moist in such a way when you're growing.
Right.
I think mixing the Michigan peat topsoil with that Fertilum peat moss, it's such a nice blend, and I've had great success with it.
Right.
The blend is there, and they balance out one another. So the Michigan peat topsoil has enough consistency to it that keeps that peat moss from getting dry. And that peat moss has enough consistency to it and just doing the opposite from keeping the topsoil from staying too wet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was, for me, it's been one of the happiest mediums that I've combined together. Not that there are not others, don't get me wrong. I always say this, whatever it is that you're using and you're successful with it, by all means, stay with it.
Right. I think that Happy Frog, some of that stuff you showed me the other day, was a good product. I mean, it really kind of had that nice blend. It seemed like it almost had that blended together in the bag. And that's what we're all looking for, something pretty easy, something that you can just buy, put in the bag, and be done with mm-hmm. it. And that's where going to the independent garden centers. I mean, going to the local guys. Go, you know, if you're on the north side, go see Jim at Lakeview. You know, you're down south, there's Scott at Maddox, and you got Todd at Bates. I mean, they're going to tell you what's going on. You know, go out there and see Burger Farm. They'll guide you to make sure you get the right products. So yeah, you might spend a few bucks more, but you're going to get so much more out of it. Plus, I feel like some of the soils don't have to be rejuvenated. You don't have to pull it all out, throw it away.
No.
You can reuse the quality soils for multiple years. Or some of that cheap stuff, man, once it's, you almost need to just dispose of it every single year.
Yeah, and, you know, when you're using these soils too, like you said, when you're removing some of the current season's plants at the end of the season, you know, what was growing there, you know, just gently tap that root system and try and leave as much of that soil in that pot. The only time I ever encourage a homeowner to discard the soil in containers or window boxes or whatever type of pot or planter that you're using is if you've had disease issues.
Right.
That's when you want to remove the soil, discard it. Don't even really, I never encourage people to take that to their compost bin.
No.
Just spread that somewhere else or get rid of it. And, you know, sanitize the inside of the container and then start new. And like you said, get with your local garden centers and nurseries and ask them, you know, what's the preferred blend? What do you think? What do you guys seem to think that you see people successful using with annuals? And you'll be glad that you did. And that's when you reap the rewards of what you plant. You know, when you have beautiful planters and containers and you have guests over, you have friends, and they're like, my, your containers are beautiful. Mm-hmm. Where do you get your plants? And it's not always necessary we get the plants. You know, the question is, what are you using to grow in?
Exactly.
What are you, maybe what are you fertilizing with? And you know that mixture I was telling you about with Fertilume and mm-hmm. the Michigan pea top? After I plant with that mixture, the real key is using the fertilizer beads, the Osmocote, on top.
Yep.
After I plant. And there's a couple differences with some of those fertilizer beads, the Osmocote, and we'll tell you that when we come out of the break. But this is a great topic. And these are things, you know, you're not going to necessarily do today, but these are things you need to start thinking about because we're only weeks away. And how many days are we from spring?
Oh,
32.
32. Can you believe it? 32 days. It's almost quick. A month.
It's
Bring
it's
it on.
Fast approaching. 749 B105 in and around the house with Tony Works and Bob Barge alongside me this morning. We have a great show lined up for you. And later on, we're going to talk about influenza, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that, and also chicken noodle soup. What does that have to do with the flu? And we're going to ask Dr. Amy Haney around the 8 o'clock hour. Hang in there with us. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works, and we're starting to cover a lot of ground right now, and we were just talking a little bit about soils a moment ago, and we're going to continue that discussion here as we go into this segment. But, hey, a great way to stay in touch with us is really on Facebook. So if you get out there and you're a Facebooker, definitely like us and feel free to ask us questions and so forth or even comment on some of the photos and various things that we post. We always welcome that. And also, Alex does a great job keeping up with the latest of the podcast. So if you want to catch something from a couple of weeks ago, you can certainly do that. And also feel free to email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. And we'll certainly get back to you. Give us a day or two. Sometimes we'll get back to you right that same day. But if you can just be a little patient there, we'll eventually catch up with you. And also, just to give you a little bit of weather info, it looks like we're going to be, what, today, Bob, in the low 40s, kind of partly cloudy, maybe partly sunny, however you wanted to describe that as being. You know, it's either usually one or the other, but yeah, they're one and the same. And the next week's forecast, too, actually kind of looks pretty much like normal.
Like normal, 30s. We could. I know we're still showing some chances of rain, and man, did we have rain! I mean, those who are in the flooding area, you know, we are thinking of you or praying for you guys because that river came up in a hurry, and hopefully it'll go back down, and we just don't get the rains. But everything's been saturated, just saturated.
Well, when you walk out there on the lawn, you know, if you start to sink in it, kind of back up.
Yeah, there was some yesterday. We did some work for some people. But I had to go check the yards and make sure. But they were on the high sides where everything sloped away, mm-hmm. and it wasn't bad. But there's been this week we had stuff scheduled. We just couldn't do. Wow. I mean, I went to the house, and I just went, I'm not tearing up your yard. It's not worth it.
No, it's not worth it. You know, and you get that soil compaction, and you just really make a mess of things. You know, I had a delivery yesterday that had stopped by somebody's house over on Church Street, and mm-hmm. Their backyard kind of butts up against the Banklet Creek.
Yeah.
And you know, I just looked over and I was like, wow, it was right up next to their house.
Right there.
And when the folks came to the door and I handed them their floral arrangement, you know, I asked her, I said, did you guys get water in the house? She said, yeah.
Wow.
And I was thinking, I was trying to remember the last time we had a significant amount of rainfall and where the river really crested up there.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it a few years ago? It was around 60 feet again.
Yeah, it got up into the 60s.
Yeah.
Some of those areas, you know, even along Route 8 there in Kentucky, you know, we have a gentleman that works on our truck, you know, the water was up around on both sides.
Crazy.
Route 8 down there. You could see the river. It was right there within 5 feet. And it was going down, but part of his parking lot flooded on the low end.
Right.
So he had to move all his vehicles up. And he said if it got to 61 feet, it was up in their building. So there's a lot of people out there. So
it's wet. That's for sure. You know, and try and remember this in a couple of minutes. Because of the wetness, we need to touch base as well on winter seeding.
Yeah.
We had talked about that a couple of weeks ago.
We will. But when we went to the break, and I wanted to bring up a point because, you know, I stopped down to see you yesterday and, you know, you were talking about soils and, you know, talking to the independent garden centers. You know, what I liked that I saw about you was you said, you know, I like Happy Frog soil. And I come by and Tim is planting an arrangement using Happy Frog soil. You're using the products because you know they're good, not just trying to sell something to somebody.
Well, to a degree, I will use various products. I had really brought those bags in to show a customer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would have noticed there on the side of the Happy Frog was another one called Ocean Forest.
Yep, saw that.
Which is engineered or geared for containers, large containers, and really for good water drainage. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's usually the demise of a planting is if you don't get that good water drainage. And speaking of that, I don't know about you at Barge Nursery, I know most of us in the industry, we know how important drainage is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's most anything, anywhere. Is there anything that you prefer to use in the bottom of a pot when you're potting things up? Do you have a method?
It depends on what the pot is and what we're doing. So, like, say if we need some heavy-duty weight, mm-hmm. I will use some gravel or some sort of aggregate.
Right.
You know, I'll use, if the holes are real big, I can't use a pea gravel, but I like pea gravel. It drains well, or a chip gravel, you know, and once again, you can go see Margie. She'll help you with all that stuff if you have some containers and you need to fill that up. Other thing I like is pine bark mulch or pine bark nuggets. If you've got large pots and you don't want to spend a lot on soil, a way, kind of a little hack, is put some of that in there, put a bag of that might cost you $4 or $5 first, and then your soil, and that really seems to help. Because we've got some we work on for a big church. They're 48 inches tall and wide.
Right,
that's a big pot.
You know, and there's another advantage to that, too, and that lightens the weight.
Yes.
But on the flip side, you know, you have some of those larger pots, and if your plantings are located in a windy location,
you'd want the gravel.
Don't sacrifice that light weight for, you know, in lieu of the winds and so forth to where it might tip over.
But I always like at least something in the bottom of every pot, unless it's a little tiny pot. But if it's a, you know, 16-inch pot or bigger, I'm putting in some sort of gravel or something to help it drain. So as the water comes, it kind of has a place to go and get out.
Right. You know, I like to use broken clay pots as well.
Yeah, it works great.
You get those, you know, from the shape of the clay pot, how it's formed, you use that concave side, turn it up, mm-hmm. and it keeps a void underneath, and it never clogs up.
Ever.
No. I have to tell you a funny story. A customer, I was potting something up for a customer, and I was using the broken clay pots in the bottom. And she goes, have you ever cut your finger reaching in there? And I said, no, been doing it for years. A minute or two later.
Cut your finger?
Yeah. Well, I kind of just nicked it. I mean, I didn't cut it bad. I just nicked it, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, it's like an announcer on TV, a baseball game.
Sure.
And they'll say, such and such hasn't struck out in 32 at bats. And what does he do? He strikes out. So no sooner than she said that.
What about drainage? Do you like to use saucers on the bottom of your pots?
I do. Depends on where the pots are located, especially if they're indoors, if you're using them for, you know, various types of houseplants and so forth.
It's a must.
It's a must. And even on the deck or a patio, sometimes if you're not using saucers and water, you know, it stays moist underneath the pot.
Mm-hmm.
It might leave some sort of a marking.
It probably will.
Right. It probably will. You know, a lot of times, you know, eventually it dissipates or you can clean it. But I think a saucer adds an element of, you know, it does something for the appearance of the container.
A nice, elegant look.
Yeah.
It kind of it takes that pot that's really pretty, gives it that extra layer.
Say that again, really pretty.
Really party. It's party. But you know, it does add a little element of elegance. And I think especially if, you know, if you have a pot where you're walking up to your front door and you really want to give it a nice look besides just throwing the pot in there, put a saucer on it. You'd be amazed how much that little adds, or even sometimes add those little feet that raise the pot up a little bit.
The pot feet.
Yep, those are kind of, they just add a little nice appeal to it. They cost a few bucks. I mean, saucers aren't always the cheapest.
No.
You know, but they do make a difference.
They try to, you know, it's really funny. You're talking about saucers. You know, we're talking about pottery, you know, the glazed pots right now for the most part with the saucers. But also with clay, you can buy saucers as well.
Sure.
But it does. It makes for a nicer appearance. But, you know, using the pot feet and getting the pot up off the ground, if it's outside on a patio or a deck, you know, you're saving yourself from that sitting on there and maybe perhaps, you know, causing some sort of a marking of some sort. But it also allows for better drainage.
It's better drainage. That's why I
sitting,
like it.
It's not sitting flat right up on the decking boards.
And most pots have a corresponding saucer. Not every pot does. Because we have some that are really big that they just don't make a saucer that big to match the pot that we've sold before.
Or they get quite expensive.
But they do get quite, they can get quite expensive. But, you know, there's other things you can do if you're worried about this. But those little feet are pretty nice. You know, if you have some sort of little stone, flat stones, and you want to raise it up a little bit. So there's things you can do that can help, you know, maybe be a little cheaper. But I still like to use a saucer if I can.
Oh, I do too. You know what else is neat too? And for us at our garden center, pottery has been one of the biggest hits in recent years. And I've seen pottery kind of, you know, go in waves, you know.
Ebbs and flows.
Yes. And, you know, some of the colors today and some of the different shapes, you know, like the square pots, the tapered pots, and some of the glazed pots that you can pick up at your local garden centers and nurseries, they'll have attached saucers.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to buy something a la carte. But, you know, when you start taking various colors of annuals and kind of make them match or work or coordinate with some of the glazed colors, it's stunning. It really is.
Yeah, you take some of those, like, bright blues and cobalt blues and throw some yellows or oranges with it.
Right.
Man, it really pops. Or even whites. It really pops with that. You know, and we like to use some of those resin pots, too. The ones that...
The lighter weight.
Especially if you need larger ones, they work well. I found that you need to spend a little money usually on those. Usually the higher qualities last longer. I've got some that are 15 years old. They still look the same. They were expensive. I couldn't believe how much I paid for them 15 years ago, but they've lasted.
Wow.
So the value is there.
Do you ever see those a few years ago? I'm going to go back a little ways in time. You could buy those, like, they were containers that were styrofoam.
Yes. They would last for 4 or 5 years.
They were very lightweight. They were, you know, you would nick them like a cooler rather easily. But you know what was interesting about those is that they provided that element of insulation going through the winter months, that they were quite large.
Yeah.
And with that styrofoam core, you know, how it was formed with a great deal of soil volume, you know, some of the evergreens that we choose to use to go through the winter months in containers, they did quite well in those.
They did. Did you ever use any of the self-watering ones where you actually, they have the container filled with inside the plastic? And so they have the planter, but it's a little thicker. So you actually pour water in the outside, and then that way the plants can absorb it. So if you have an area where you can't water every day or what you need to, you can do this, and it might last a week.
Right.
You ever try those?
No, I've sold those, and I never really have gotten a lot of good feedback from customers as, you know, hey, these things really work. They're really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what your spin is on it, but you can tell me when we come out of the break. 749-B105, in and around the house. And we got to take another quick break. And also, don't forget, hang out here with us this morning. We got lots and lots of stuff to talk about. And our plant of the week, I'll just tease you with this one, are the wonderful-looking blooming azaleas. So we'll talk about that later on in the show. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And alongside me, my partner over there today is Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. And we just kind of actually been talking a little bit about soils and various containers and so forth. And really, this kind of was not on the agenda. And that's why I like our our banter and our conversation, because sometimes topics will just come up or things that we might be thinking about or have been recently working with, and we're going to kind of just...
That or we have attention deficit disorder and we can't focus on
that
anything.
Might be
that too.
I know that I have that problem. But we got a great show lined up for you this morning. Don't forget our good friend, Dr. Amy Haney, my trailing physician. When I go out of town, she's along with me, keeps me protected from germs.
That's really good.
Yeah, how you like that? We're going to talk about influenza, the flu. You know, there was a big outbreak the other day, Bob.
There was? I actually did not know that.
They think there were, well, let me say this. Maybe I ought to just digress and back up a second. Is it somewhere in Roselawn, one of the school systems, I think there was a third of the school, the students did not make it to school because of some sort of flu-like illness, maybe.
If there's some in the school and a third are out, I'd say close the school a day or two, sanitize, and then let the kids come back.
Something's going on. And part of that discussion, this is interesting. This is a first for us. And we're still early in the season, and you might say, hey, what does this have to do with the price of eggs in Texas? But I'm just saying that figuratively.
Sure.
We're going to taste test some various chicken noodle soups from restaurants here locally.
I know you told me we were doing this. This
is
fun.
Tri-State. And just to let you know, Panera Bread was very kind to donate some chicken noodle soup to us.
Okay.
And Chick-fil-A, Pam Gilchrist, she is the area marketing director. She was very kind. They donated some chicken noodle soup along with a local favorite, Izzy's.
Yeah.
You know, these are all favorite places.
Right.
And also, Joe Tucker down at Bob Evans in Fort Wright also donated some chicken noodle soup from Bob Evans.
And we get to eat these?
Yes.
Are you cooking them?
Well, Amy's going to come in and heat things up.
Oh,
and then
okay.
We're going to have our discussion about influenza. And where does the chicken soup come into play? Well, hey, what does it make you really feel a lot better when you're aching and you're kind of just congested? And a good old hot bowl of chicken noodle soup, is there some benefits to it? So that's where that's all coming from.
I know there's benefit to flowers, so that makes me feel better. And, you know, like I told you before, all the babies are starting to show up at the nursery. So
there
it's starting to feel like spring. And was your greenhouse really warm this week when the sun was out?
That it was.
Yesterday morning was hot. The greenhouse got up to about 85. I mean, I was opening doors and
short
cooling
sleeves.
It down.
Yeah. That's when it's fun and pleasant to be under glass.
All the dirt was, you could smell the fresh soil that was being kind of mixed up. And, you know, like I said, I'll try to get some pictures up before the end of the show on Facebook of that.
We'll do that. And also, we're going to touch base with a very good friend of ours, Margie at Bushman Supply, just to kind of see what's going on up there in her neck of the woods and kind of what's popular and what's starting to happen as we ramp up and get close to March and the beginning of spring. So we'll be talking with Margie. Always very interesting stuff right there at Bushman Supply.
But before we went to break, we were talking about the pots that you fill, and they're supposed to last, you know, some a week. It depends probably what color, how much sunlight you're getting. And you had mentioned that you felt like some of your customers did not have a lot of great success with that. Now, I'm on the other end. There's one from Crescent Garden called True Drop. That was their version that they brought out. And we used them at the garden center for a little while. Mm-hmm. And they did help. They really did.
Yeah, you were talking about it. So these are self-watering.
So what you
types?
Do is you fill the container up, and the outside of the container is the reservoir. And as the plant needs the moisture, it kind of draws what it needs. And they have three little indicators on it, so you can tell kind of when it's a third full, two-thirds
full. Kind of like a gas tank indicator
in a car.
Yeah, so it kind
of indicates when you're getting low, so you know what you need to do. And I found that they really worked well on a southwest exposure at the garden center, and we ended up selling them to a church next door because they needed something that they couldn't water every week because they weren't there every day to where they had somebody watering. You know, and they had pretty good success.
See, I find that very interesting because this is my spin on it. I've seen a number of different types of self-watering containers. I mean, from pots to hanging baskets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, some of the containers that I've seen that were labeled as being self-watering seem to be some of those that they were very deep. You know, they would maybe go down, you know, if they were taller, taper types of pots.
Yeah.
To where, like, I think that it's almost virtually impossible for some of the annual roots to get that deep
right.
and search for
I've
water.
I've seen those too.
So I I question those, and I really don't use those pots for that purpose.
Right.
Because I certainly don't want that water that full in that pot to where it's just really sitting in water. You get a lot of, you know, that might be beneficial for some of the plants that kind of root a little deeper or have a tap root.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think most of the annuals and various plants have more of a horizontal growth habit. So going that deep, it's hard for them to get that deep.
Or if it does, it takes them a long time.
It takes them a long time. Now, also, I kind of question or wonder with some of those self-watering pots. And by the way, if you've used those and you want to chime in, 749-B105, let us know. Is it possible that the water becomes a little stagnant or a little rancid and you get a foul odor?
I haven't seen it on the ones that I've used. Now, I will say there's been some hanging baskets supposedly that are self-watering, and basically all they are is a saucer built in to the pot, and you pour a little bit kind of, you know, right, you know, a couple inches above the bottom of the pot. I found that those really didn't help that much. I didn't get any big benefit out of those.
Right.
Because there wasn't enough water really to absorb and the roots to drive up. So you really had to water those from the top. But some of these other ones, this is one of the first ones I found that I really kind of liked.
And it was from Crescent?
It's from Crescent Garden. But the problem is on any of those pots, they're expensive.
They are, but they're quality pots. And I reached out to our friend Ron Robin from Robin's Florist and Garden Center. He may call us in. But the reason why I reached out to Ron is because I know Ron has done some things on the west side of Cincinnati over in Delhi with Crescent's pots.
Right.
And they're quite nice. When you drive around some of the corners up there in Delhi, you'll see some of those pots potted up.
Right.
I just wanted his flair or his take on Crescent's pots. You're right, but they do stuff that's kind of big. It's commercial. Numerous colors to choose from.
You know, you say it's commercial, though, but I'll sell some to homeowners for
right.
sure. But they are pricey. When you see the quality, like, for example, I ordered some black pots, and sometimes you order black pots, and within two seasons, they're not black anymore. You know, they'll fade out really bad.
Yeah, a little UV
issues. You know, some
of
the Crescent, they last. Like, I've got some that are 5 years old. They don't look like brand new, but I'll sit them right next to the new ones, but they still look black.
But they're, you know, and if I'm not mistaken, they're double-walled.
Yes.
So there's
some of them are. There's a few of them that are cheaper, but most of them are double-walled,
so
high quality.
For stability, you know, so they're a lot, they're
and they
more
do guarantee
rigid.
Them. It's like a 10-year warranty on some of their pots. But, you know, you might spend $200-$300 on one pot.
Well, that's a sizable pot.
That would be like I've got some of those. That's what I was talking about earlier. But they're lasted 15 years. So I spent maybe $200 15 years ago. Well, if you do the math, that actually isn't bad. So
we're
not math wizards around here.
I didn't do too bad in math. I was better in math than I am or was in English.
Yeah.
But Atina will tell you that.
But I will say the one thing when it comes to these pots is you have to use a good quality soil, which is kind of the bring it all the way back around to the beginning of the show. If you have a great pot and you use terrible soil, you're still not going to get any
benefit.
You
usually get terrible results.
Yeah. It still comes back. Pots are important. Not as important as the soil quality. It's definitely way more important.
I wholeheartedly agree. So, and if Ron kind of chimes in or gives us a call, we might touch base on it again. But
if people are out there and they've used certain pots or they like clay pots, I'd love to hear what they like, what they use, you know. Send us a message on Facebook if you don't want to call in, but, you know, get a hold of us here.
You know, everyone has different ideas. You know, you had mentioned using some of the pine bark nuggets and so forth in the bottom of containers and then filling the rest of it up with soil. You know, that's one of the biggest dilemmas. You know, I like the fact that you brought that up because of the weight issue. A lot, you know, and I, nothing sexist or nothing mean by this, but women primarily, they are the shoppers in our industry, and they are the ones that are doing most of the gardening. I don't mean anything bad, guys, but they do, and they're going for colored containers and various styles of containers. It has to be easy and light in weight for them to move those around and handle those, and that was a great idea. So there's a number of different things that you can add to, you know, what are some of the great ways or tips when you're doing these containers.
Yeah, if you throw gravel on the bottom of a pot, it's a 20, 30-pound pot, and then you throw 30, 40 pounds worth of gravel and then your soil on top, all of a sudden you're trying to move a 200-300-pound pot.
You're right on. I've experienced that myself with some of the larger ceramic pots, and it's very difficult to move them, and I can tell you firsthand. Well, anyway, we're going to leave that arena when we come back out of the break. Let's take it down, go down to the shed, Bob, because I'm interested. You know, do you have a couple of top tools, maybe five tools that every gardener should have in the shed or in the garage or wherever it is they work out of?
So, there's a few that are a must.
I'll give you a couple of my favorites as well. 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And if you're just joining us, good morning. We've been talking a little bit about containers and soil mixes and various things like that. And we're going to switch gears and go down into the tool shed, because this is the time of year, I think, when things are still somewhat slow for the most part, Bob. This is a great time to, you know, kind of go over and look at your tools, sharpen some of the tools, clean your tools. That's really, really important.
Yep.
And I'm kind of a little old-fashioned. I like wooden handle tools as well. And then I like to just lightly sand it and then take like tongue oil or something like that, and linseed oil, and just rub over the handles. And it makes a huge difference in how they feel in your hand. But that's just taking care of things. And when you take care of your tools, you know, they'll take care of you. And I always say a fool with a tool is always a fool.
There you go.
It's essential to have good tools and know where those tools are. I don't know about you. I know where mine are. They kind of hang up on the wall. They're there. I don't leave them lie around somewhere where I'm hunting them down. So, I try my best, but there's times when I'm not, but I do, you know, I'm a little OCD sometimes, but I'll find myself spending more time getting things back into order than I am going ahead with a task,
right?
Because it's got to be there, and knowing where things are, I think you work a lot more efficiently, better, and you just feel good about it, and you can go about your job and do whatever it is you have to do. So what are some of your, like, I have to have, because I'll tell you some of mine, tools in the tool shed?
Well, first of all, I do think in most cases, buying a quality tool makes a huge difference. So, for example, you know, I'm the wood handle is not as important to me as is a quality shovel that has like foot pegs on it that, you know, when you jump on it, you got some extra space for your feet to hit. So as you're digging, and if you're digging for a long period of time, it helps keep your feet from hurting as much. So a quality shovel is really, really important to me. Yeah, you might be able to buy one for $12.99. It's not going to work like the other ones. So this is one time where
Would you buy it? You have a suggestion
like
for
Razorback
somebody?
Razorback is a really good shovel. Razorback makes a really good shovel. They've made them for years. That's one you probably have because it's a wood handle. It's got a foot peg to it. It's got a pointed shovel. Like, there are some that are more rounded, and those kind of just kind of scrape out and dig out. But I'm thinking more of a pointed shovel is definitely important.
Right.
And I do think you need the foot pegs. It's very important. And what I mean by that is on the top of the actual blade part will turn over and really, really works well when you're digging because you can put your foot into it. Another thing I think that is super important, a high-quality spade. You use a spade in your garden all the time, whether you're edging beds, whether you're removing plants or transplanting. A good quality spade, I think, makes a huge difference and a world of difference.
Mm-hmm.
One brand that I like, I think I'd mentioned before, is called the King of Spades.
King of Spades. I like it. Sounds like you're at the card table when you say that.
So that's a high quality.
King of Spades is Trump.
You know, and there's so many tools out there that I think you need.
Oh,
I don't know if I can list just five, but I'm sure I can.
I have a couple, too, that, you know, are definitely essentials, and they are must-haves. 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We got to take another quick break. If you have anything in the shed or a must-have gardening tool that you think everybody should have, certainly share that with us, because we're going to continue this conversation when we come back out of the break. And we also have our good friend with us, Ron Robin from Robin's Florist and Garden Center. We wanted to reach out to Ron and ask him about some of those containers we were talking about from Crescent a moment ago. So hang in there with us, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House. And while we were in the break, our good friend Ron Robin has called in, and We wanted to ask Ron about a couple of things over there that I know that he's done in the past with the Crescent containers that Bob and I were talking about a couple of segments ago. And Ron, are you on there with us?
Yes, I am. Good
hey,
morning.
Good morning. How are you? Did you already do your drive-through at McDonald's and all that good stuff and get the Egg McMuffin?
Cup of coffee? No, I'm back on the Egg McMuffin. I just got my coffee, and I am in the greenhouse getting a game plan on what we're going to plant today.
Got it. So what's going on in the greenhouse since you've mentioned it?
Yeah, well, we just yesterday, a bunch of us, we just stuck about 10,000 unrooted cuttings that came in. So we got those are under the mist bed, and they are starting to propagate. So we are growing those on, so they'll start rooting here in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And then we also got about 7,000 plugs in that we are going to start potting up today and tomorrow. So we are ready for spring.
That's what a lot of you guys are doing. Bob said the same thing. That's what they've been busy doing up here at Bard's. And I know that you know, all the growers in the tri-state area are doing the same thing. I know that Baton's grows a lot, and they're plugging. The guys over at Fort Thomas, you guys.
Great time of year.
It's that
when
time
you
of
see
year.
Those plugs coming in, you just get excited because you know what's coming.
Right.
And it's
not
that far off.
It's all down to business right now. This is where the rubber meets the road. It's all in your hands now, Ron, when it comes to growing, right?
Right. We just need that sunshine.
Yeah, we need sunshine. Real quick, the reason why we reached out to you, we were just a moment ago talking about various types of containers and so forth. And we were talking about Crescent's containers. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, you've done some plantings or you've used those over there in the Delhi area. And I want to know what your spin is on those various types of containers.
Well, I can tell you, I did. It's going way back. We did have a program that we used those Crescent pots on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of those businesses still have them in front of their places. And what I like about them is if somebody would, hopefully they don't, but if they would hit them with a vehicle, they bounce right back. And that's what I really like.
Oh, yeah, you know, there's a lot of people that kind of get a little too close to the building and nick those, don't they?
Yes, but it does provide what's nice when you pull in, you just don't see those bars stuck in the ground. You could put a nice container there with flowers, and so when people pull up, they see this nice, beautiful plant instead of a pole sticking in the ground. And that's what I like about those Crescent is that they will take the hit and still come back.
That's a good point. See, that's why we called you, Ron. That's a good point there. No, and you're absolutely right, and you know, what a way when businesses use those containers, and also homeowners can as well. I mean, they have an array of various types of containers. You know, it really makes an impact in the community when you have stuff like that that's blooming and looks beautiful, and you pull up to a facility, and voila, there it is. But they're nice containers.
Yeah. Ron, have you ever used any of the self-watering ones from Crescent? Have you ever tried those yet?
Not from Crescent, I have not. But I do grow some for another township that has a self-watering. And when when they drop off their containers, they have the self-watering one, and we plant them, and then we'll send them to their township, and then they put them up in the air, and those are the self-watering ones.
And how do those hold up for them?
Holds up real well. They do a great job, and it saves on them watering them, and we put a slow-release fertilizer in there, and it helps. It's a win-win for everybody.
Awesome. Hey, Ron, give us your contact information before we let you go, and thanks for taking the time out to give us a shout.
Oh, not
a problem. What's your phone number over there at Robbins and your website? How's that?
Okay. Yes, we are located in Delhi Township. We're a family business. We're on 352 Pedretti Road in Delhi, and we have a florist shop in the garden center. And you can stroll through here on these cold days and see the nice plants that are growing in the greenhouse. And I just like when people come in and get to talk to them, and we talk about plants.
All right, Ron. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you Tuesday, hopefully, and definitely next Thursday when we talk about caladiums, right?
That sounds great.
You got it. Okay, have a good weekend. Bye, Ron. Great guy there. I've known Ron for a long, long time, and that's what I really like about the industry, the camaraderie.
Absolutely. And he does a lot of what we do. We do some for Union Township, where we do a lot of pots. And it is really, he's correct. They're just high quality. They last. People hit them. You know, there's no problem. But the ones we've used for Union Township, they've lasted. I mean, we use them year after year after year. But, you know, sometimes you're going to get those bigger pots. You don't have to water them as often, especially right. if you do things right. And then we'll actually sometimes throw a little pine bark mulch on top of the soil to help
give it more of a decorated look.
Decorated look, and it helps keep the soil even a little more moist, so it's a little better on the watering for the church and the township. It really makes a big difference.
Right. No, I agree with you. And thanks again, Ron, for the shout out, because we were just talking about that, and we were trying to kind of work you in there as we were discussing those containers. And let's get back down in the shed real quick.
Yeah, so what are some of the ones? I mentioned a couple I like. What about you?
Well, you know, I had to go back to when I was, you know, when I first became a homeowner. This is probably one of the most used items. It is a tool, but it's an item that's a little different than some of the hand tools and so forth. Something my dad bought for me when I first became a homeowner. And he said, you're going to really need this. And he was absolutely right. And that is a wheelbarrow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I've had it for, it's 25 years old at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll always keep it. And when I see it, it's like, thanks, Dad, for the nice gift. And he said, you're going to need this. And he was absolutely right. So that's one of my favorite tools. And if it's not a wheelbarrow, because, you know, wheelbarrow's a little funny to, it's got the single wheel with the two handles. A lot of people feel more comfortable with some of those gardening carts that have the two wheels up front and the nice, you know, the
legs. Have you seen
the
dual wheel wheelbarrows?
I have, but
we use those all the time.
I have, but I never use those. But it really makes it a little, is it easier to maneuver?
Obviously? It's easier unless you get on a slope.
Right.
But, I mean, we can put 750 pounds worth of stones and different things. Mm-hmm. So if I went to Margie's and I bought some of those steps that we put in your backyard, at a Bushelman Supply, I can put one of those big stones in a two-wheel wheelbarrow and actually get it somewhere. And it makes it easy because it gives you the leverage to have one person move something that heavy. It's pretty amazing.
Are yours metal or are they plastic?
Ours are poly.
They're plastic. Yeah, okay, yeah. The poly.
And eventually a stone will go through them. We'll go through two or three wheelbarrows a year for
really?
Sure, maybe more. We abuse them, but they get used every day.
Right.
Soils constantly. I mean, they hold 10 cubic feet of material.
Right.
That's a big scoop of dirt.
I think that's a must have. Now, provided, you know, you have relatively a large landscaped area or a sizable yard, if you just have a little posty stamp of a yard,
single wheels are great.
Then, you know, you really don't need a wheelbarrow because you probably would have some issues. Where would you store it?
Mm-hmm.
But I have found for me, it's always in the shed. I know where it is when I need it. That has been something that's been a great deal of value for me.
Yep.
Probably what else has been valuable? Because we all know we need hand tools to dig with and cultivate with.
Right.
I have found another item for me that I try my best to encourage everybody to invest in, and that is a tank sprayer.
There you go. Do you like poly or metal ones?
Well, I have both. Okay. And the metal tank that I have is a stainless steel tank. It's a 2 gallon, very nice. The only dilemma with it is you can't really see what the water level is of the substance that's inside it. Whereas the plastic, a lot of those you can see through for the most part, which I think is of value because of that. But I like the heavier duty type of tank sprayers. Those that have, now this is really funny, but those that have the bronze like wand,
yeah,
instead of the plastic. Yep. But the problem is, Bob, for me, I can sell you a $14.99 inexpensive tank sprayer, or I can take you up to a $49.99 tank sprayer. And most people go for the inexpensive one. But when you buy an expensive tank sprayer, one of the better ones, you can buy replacement parts for them.
Right.
And they're going to hold up a lot longer. I'm trying to remember couple of tank sprayers, and if you clean them out, that's so important. After each use, clean them out and clean them out thoroughly.
That is key,
and they'll never clog up on you. They'll stay true to you and be a valuable tool. And also, I encourage people to have more than one, and I'll tell you why I encourage people to have more than one when we come out of the break. And we're going to continue our discussion a little bit more with the tools in the tool shed and what are valuable and what isn't maybe. And after that, we'll talk about our plan of the week, the beautiful azalea. 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. If you're just getting up and joining us, welcome. I hope you have I don't know if it's a hot tea or a cup of coffee or maybe one of your favorite juices. Just sit back and relax because we got some other interesting things yet to bring to the table this morning in our show. And one of those is Dr. Amy Haney. She'll be joining us around the 8 o'clock hour. We'll be talking about influenza, the flu.
Yep.
And I get a flu shot every year, and this is always an interesting topic for me and a lot of people, as a matter of fact. And we're going to couple that up with chicken noodle soup because you're going to ask me, how's that related to the flu? Who doesn't like a hot bowl of chicken noodle soup when you're feeling achy and feverish and all congested? It just makes us feel good. And why is that so? And four locals, and I'm sure some of these locals are favorites out there amongst most of you in the Cincinnati area, have donated some chicken noodle soup that we're going to talk about a little bit. And that is Panera Bread. Thank you, folks, from Panera Bread. Chick-fil-A, Pam Gilchrist has also taken care of us. Izzy's. Everyone likes Izzy's and the corned beef, but we're going to check out their chicken noodle soup. And Bob Evans, Joe Tucker helped us out from over there in Fort Wright yesterday. Down on the farm. So that's around the 8 o'clock hour. And also between now and 8, we're going to talk with our good friend Margie from Bushelman Supply and see what's going on up there in the Woodland area and talk a little bit about some hardscaping items and so forth. And hey, if you want to keep up with us, check us out on our Facebook page. Like us when you're on our Facebook page. You can also catch a past show with our podcast at any given time. And also feel free to email us with any questions. Or if there's anything that you want to talk about in the landscape, certainly feel free to chime in. And if you have questions, if you're doing some landscaping this upcoming spring, Bob will attest to this. Now is the time to get with your local garden centers and nurseries, those who can help you with your plantings and those who will do it for you. The sooner you get on it, the better.
Yeah, if you're looking to have something done by your landscaper, your garden center, you know, you're definitely going to need help and get something scheduled. Now is the time to call those people. I can tell you for a fact, Scott at Maddox is getting crazy and he's getting plenty of phone calls to get his landscape crews out there. So, you know, make sure you get a hold of them, you call now and get things on the books if you can,
mm-hmm.
just to get scheduled in so you're not behind. But you know, we were talking about some tools, and I think some very important things to have in the shed are just those kind of smaller little hand tools, the little hand trowel, the little hand shovel, the little garden weeder. You know, I think some of those little hand tools just hanging on one of the pegs in the garage where you know where they're at will be really convenient at different times. You know, you're not going to use a weeder right now, probably. You'll need that eventually.
When you say a weeder, are you thinking of one I'm thinking of?
Like a
long stem.
Long stem. It's got a little fork on the end. Yep.
That is a great tool that I think that does not get a lot of merit mm-hmm. that it deserves. But, boy, you can dig down and pull out a dandelion with that lickety split.
And they got the little hand, little garden hose so you can kind of like cultivate small areas.
Uh-huh.
Or if you're working in your containers. You know, we were just talking about all this potting soil and you got some old stuff. Those little hand tools really make all the difference in the world, and they're just easy to get to and they're lightweight. So, you know, if maybe you're one who's not, you know, physically strong enough to lift some of the heavy tools, this is a really good, these are some of the good ones to have, you know. And if you're looking for little garden gifts, these are good ones to give because they do break. They're usually not expensive. So sometimes they break a little easier if you try to do too much with them. They're just great to have in the garden.
Yeah, they're about $5-7, you know, inexpensive.
You can buy some for 99 cents, but you're going to once again get
some
that.
And that's when the paint flakes off of
and
the metal.
And they're going to break.
But some of my favorites are some of those nice ergonomic types of hand tools that are aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very strong. They don't rust, you know. They're very durable. So look for those at your local garden centers and nurseries.
I think that's a must to have in the garden.
Yeah. I have one more, and we'll conclude it, unless you have another one, too. We can go on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, boy, I favor the watering wands.
Yes.
And one of my favorites is from Dram.
Mm-hmm.
And if the kids like colors and various things, Dram comes in another an array of colors, you know, orange, green, red, purple, you know, kids like color. You can also get the small pistols, you know, the hose nozzles.
Yep.
Kids love those. But what's really cool about the watering lawn, as you get a little older like me, you don't want to always necessarily bend over, or if you want to water something up high, you can certainly do it. And now Dram has the little thumb shut off. It's just a, like a real little smooth operating lever.
Right. So you do, it's easy.
It's easy.
Well, then
it's
they'll come with pretty long extensions,
right?
You know, wands.
And
so
an icebreaker on the
you
end.
You don't have to bend over. And also, you know, they fan out nicely so they won't wash your soil away. You know, and they're just really a quality water wand. So sometimes, you know, look for that brand. I think you'll be real happy.
Yeah, Google Dram. I really like Dram a lot. We sell them at our garden center. I don't know. Do you
handle?
Yeah, it's you won't go wrong.
We use them.
It's a good gardening tool to have in the shed.
Yep. And then get your tools sharpened, and you know, now's the time. Get your power equipment. I mean, I know we're just talking about tools and we're getting ready to move on. I just want to mention it. You know, if you haven't got your lawnmower serviced, you know, get those out there.
Well, I already got I've gotten all my stuff back from Bud Herbert Motors.
You already got it back?
Yeah.
You just took that in?
Yeah. No, it was,
man, they were quick.
They had it 5-6 days, and hey, phone call, your blower's ready, your weed eater's ready, your mower's.
Get your tools sharpened.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I really like to do, and I want to mention to people, when you're done using your tools, hose them off, clean them up. They last longer. You know, I really believe that. Like, even your push spreaders, when you put your Fertilum 3-step coming up in a month, month and a half, you know, you're going to be putting that down. I like to hose mine out because I think they last longer.
They do. You know, get all that residue off of it.
Cleans it up.
Absolutely.
I like to hose off my shovels and, you know, and then I'll let them dry and then I hang them up. I just think things last longer. And if you're going to spend money on quality tools, why not have them last?
That's right. I'm with you. We have to take another quick break. When we come out of the break, we're going to talk about the plant of the week. And she's a beauty when she's in bloom. And we'll tell you who she is when we come back. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. We got to take another quick break. And feel free to join us. And if you want to talk about something in the landscape or whatever, give us a call. Turn up the temperatures, what we need to turn up. We need it to get warm. We need those 70-degree temperatures, and they'll be just around the corner
here
before long.
You hear those first three notes, and you know exactly what song that is.
You know
who that
is.
Gets you excited.
It does. And our good friend, actually, from over on the west side of Cincinnati, the area over there, is our friend Denny, the Birdman. Good morning, Denny.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
We're doing well. How about yourself?
Not too bad. I'm staying dry most of the time. So.
Oh, I hear you. I hear you.
It's not an easy thing to do.
No, it hasn't been.
Yeah, I just wanted to get in here real quick and invite you all out next weekend to Maple Sugar Days out at Farbach Warner
Nature
Preserve.
Oh, that's right. You do that. Where is that exactly?
That's at the corner of Corain Avenue and Poole.
And Poole?
Yes.
Okay.
Corain Avenue and Poole. It's about the only green spot there on Corain Avenue.
And real quick, what time does all this take place?
This will be Saturday and Sunday both, noon to 4 both days.
Noon to 4. Denny, you know what? You may very well see me. In all the years that you've been part of this show, I've yet to meet you, and I would certainly welcome that.
Well,
and,
I'll be out there in what they call the Sugar Camp.
The Sugar Camp. Okay.
Yeah. So you can find out all about it at greatparks.org.
Greatparks.org. Well, thanks for sharing, Denny, and enjoy your weekend. And we'll definitely, I'm going to do my best to come over there and meet with you.
Well,
okay?
I'd really like to meet y'all and things like that. So I hope y'all get a chance to come out.
All right, Denny. Thank you, buddy, for the invitation.
All right. Have a good day.
You do the same. Buddy. Bob, we need to do that. I would, you know, it's. I've done this before, have met with some various, you know, people who have participated with the show and so forth, and even those who come into the garden center. And, you know, it's just it's a good feeling when you can take the time and you have the time to do that and just interact and meet with people. And, you know, you meet wonderful people, make friends. And,
I love talking to listeners. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. So, but before Denny called and gave us that great invitation, we were getting ready to talk about our plant of the week.
Which is?
The azalea.
I like it.
You know, you can't go, I shouldn't say you can't go wrong, because a lot of people have gone wrong with azaleas.
And we'll come back to that.
Yeah, we will. But I do love the azalea. It's a beautiful plant. And when it's in bloom, And our good friend Amy just got in, and she's kind of getting our soups ready. And we had mentioned we were talking about azaleas, and first thing she said was the Masters, you know, the golf tournament.
Yes, the Masters.
You see the azaleas in the background, and you're like, wow, you know. And I think there's a lot of people here in Cincinnati that still have pretty good luck with it, but the key is, I think, planting them in the right spot. I think it's very important.
I definitely agree. You know, there's something else about azaleas with me that I think – in recent years, do you think they've kind of been forgotten about or not really talked about, maybe have fallen out of favor, so to speak, because, nothing more beautiful than an azalea when it's in full bloom.
I think sometimes people forget because there has been some issues, or they might have heard their neighbor had issues with them, that they don't want. They're not the first choice of flowers because, one, they don't bloom all summer. And when they're not in bloom, sometimes they are a little touchy. You know, you can get a few bug issues with them. So I think people have gone, hey, I want something easier. I want something easier. So I think that's what's changed with the azaleas. However, if you get them in the right spot and you're taking care of them properly, there's not much prettier when there's in bloom.
Oh, I've seen some in northern Kentucky. I can tell you right now where I believe the variety is Karen's, which is more of a lavender variety. And one of the more hardier varieties is Karen. Mm-hmm. And right up there on Kyle's Lane, right after you, if you're going towards the expressway, there's a house that sits on the right, and it's facing due west. And they're eye-catching. They're stunning every year, and they're taking the heat, which is incredible to me because they really like a little bit of afternoon shade if at all possible. But this is a testimonial. This plant is resilient, it's reliable every year, and they're baking in the sun and are drop dead gorgeous. And I know azaleas can do really well in this area, but the key is this: soil, preparation. I like to plant, when I plant azaleas, and a lot of peat moss with the existing soil.
Yeah, I think it brings the pH soil down, which we know on azaleas like the acidity,
right,
as opposed to an alkaline soil. So, and sometimes it's interesting. Typically, I've always thought we were more alkaline in our area, but soil range in the Cincinnati, tri-state area is incredibly different, even within miles of people.
Right, so, and what Bob's talking about is the pH level of the soil. pH is very, very, very important. And on a scale of, so let's say 4 to 8, we'll just use that as an example. 7 in the middle is neutral. Mm-hmm. When you're above 7 with the pH level, we're going more towards the alkaline side.
Correct.
Okay, and usually that's present or prevalent when we have heavy clay soils. And then under 7, again, 7's neutral, we're more on the acidic side. And that means we have either, you know, a good basis to work with for the most part, and less clay and other components in our soil, that what it's made up of. But getting a soil sample is very, very important, especially when you're growing azaleas and things that like the acidic side of the chart.
Yeah, if you can do, you can even do some of the cheap little test kits to at least test it. You'll get close.
Get an idea.
As opposed to maybe sending it off to UK or down up to Ohio State, you know, and sending and getting a full analysis of your soil. But I do like to mound my azaleas up a little bit so I can control the moisture with them as well. Sometimes they're shallow rooted, I feel. Mm-hmm. So if it's too wet, you're going to really have some issues with it, or you're going to get some rotting of the base stem, and you'll get some root rot and have some issues there. I love to have them more in morning sun than I do the afternoon sun, although you just contradicted that with what happened at that one house.
I think they favor, there's no doubt about it, they like to have a little afternoon sun.
You think afternoon or morning?
I'm sorry. Morning sun, afternoon shade. Thank you. Thanks for bringing that to my attention. I said it incorrectly, but I've seen them do well in sun, but they sometimes they get stressed out.
They do.
In the sun. And a lot of times when azaleas get stressed out, what typically comes about are lace bug issues. And that's the demise of azaleas. And if you can wipe out the lace bug issue and give them a good fertilization, man, are they stunning.
Yeah, and I think the key is to have a healthy trimming practices, healthy fertilization, healthy watering, and a good start. And I think if you do all of those, you're going to have a lot better success with your azaleas. But if you just dig a hole, shove them in the existing soil that we have, I think you might have some issues, because I don't think it's the cold. You know, people always wonder, oh, you know, the rhododendrons and azaleas, maybe it's our cold climate. No, they'll grow in much colder climates than they will here. I think it's a lot more about our soil consistency or lack of that they struggle with a little bit.
Well, you know, when we talk about pH levels, this is really, really important for when you use specific plants like azaleas that like acidic soil conditions. And, you know, blueberries as well, too, likes acidic soil conditions. When a plant is not in its ideal pH range, mm-hmm. no matter how much you fertilize that plant or what with, it will not take in those key nutrients.
Yes, so they it's going to be yellow.
They just get locked up.
In an azalea case, it's yellow.
That's what's important. It's almost like you know, those who take cholesterol medications. You're not supposed to eat, they say, like grapefruits. Mm-hmm. There's something about the grapefruit or something in it that prohibits or interacts with the cholesterol medication. Same kind of, you know, not exactly, but similar to that with pH levels. And those micronutrients are so, so key and so important. Other than nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash, you have manganese, you have boron, zinc, you have all these other trace elements that are just as important to that plant as the other three main ingredients. And when that pH is not in its right range, plants struggle. They'll tell you. They'll get chlorotic. They'll talk to us, not literally, I'm saying that facetiously, but they do, in fact, let us know when something's not right.
And there's definitely some things you can do with your azaleas to really help them. One is, I love the Fertilome product, the Azalea Evergreen Food. I think that's a really good one that you can add. It also has the imidacloprid for a little bit of lace bug control. It's not perfect, but it is a good fertilizer. I like that one.
Mm-hmm.
I think Aspomus stuff is really good for
the
azaleas.
Hollytone.
The Hollytone is excellent for azaleas, just because of the how it's processed and what's in it. So I think it makes a huge difference with azaleas. But I also think mulching is key.
Oh, most definitely, because it keeps the soil temperatures a little cooler. Mm-hmm. It also helps with moisture retention, also helps with consistency going through the winter months. You know, azaleas, not all, you know, there are some deciduous varieties that drop their foliage when we say deciduous.
Yeah, and hold that thought right there.
You got it.
Because we got to take a quick break. But I also want to remind everybody that you can download the B105 app. So if you want to listen to us and you maybe need to use the phone and you want to still listen to us but you can't where you're going, download the app. It's also a great way to stay connected with the station itself and everything that's going on. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And alongside me this morning again is Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. And we were just recently talking about azaleas, and we're going to continue that discussion as we progress here in just a moment. But before we do, we have our good friend Jane from over in Northern Kentucky on the line with us. Good morning, Jane. How are you?
Good morning, Tony. I'm doing a lot better.
Good, 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 good. So you getting
good
a
morning,
little spring
Bob.
Good morning.
Fever?
Yeah. Good to hear from you again.
Yes. You getting a little spring fever yet?
Yes. I'm dying to get out of my yard, but it's way too muddy.
Oh, yeah. It's wet, wet. Wet, wet, wet.
Don't worry about it. We got 32 days until spring.
I put a lot of leaves on my flower beds.
Uh-huh.
To help, you know, preserve them through the winter. But my daffodils are coming up.
Okay.
Now, do I need to get out there and pull those leaves off? Because it's not, I'm afraid of them freezing.
No, just leave everything as is. And a great point that you just brought up because, yeah, some of our fall bulbs, you know, the spring bloomers that we typically plant in the fall, like the daffodils, the tulips, and so forth, the hyacinths, people are starting to see some movement. And that's because we had a little bit of a warm-up.
Right.
And that's pretty much to be expected. But the good thing is, and Bob chime in at any given point in time, Mother Nature will take care of herself. What you do not want to do is mulch it any more or any further. Just leave it as is, and as things start to progress and we get a little bit warmer, you can take some of it away.
Okay, well, I don't have any leaves yet. So,
no.
Or leaves falling now.
Yeah, no. So
anyway, they're like yellow. If I pull the leaves up, they're yellow. That won't hurt them.
No, and that's because there isn't any, like, light getting to that lower
right.
part of it. You know, you maybe pull a little bit back, just be careful and just not all of it at one given time, because we don't want to expose that tender growth, because
right.
it's a little tender under where that foliage is.
And yeah, I just kind of loosened them up a little bit and sprinkled them down again.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it too much. I mean,
let Mother Nature do her thing.
We are on the trend now with our weather that each day technically is supposed to be a little warmer. Now we know we're in Cincinnati and we could get a cold snap. But
exactly.
I at this point, just I would sit tight. I think you're going to be in great shape and just let Mother Nature do her thing. And I still think you'll be just fine.
Okay. I have this weed in a lot of my flower beds. It's probably all over the yard, thanks to my neighbors. But it's low-lying, and it spreads out.
Does it have a scalloped shape type of leaf?
Yes.
It might be common ground ivy. Probably. Creeping Charlie.
Yeah.
Have you noticed it? Has it ever bloomed in past springs?
No, no.
Blue?
I don't think it does. But
no?
It just gets in my flower beds. Every summer, I have to pull them out.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's worse than ever.
Can Does it
I just
vine?
Use, do I have to dig them up, or do I need to use that, what's that one?
Well, there's a couple things that you can do. One is I'd like to see you bring it into the garden center or take a photograph of it if you're savvy enough to send us a photograph so we know exactly what it is. But if it's in the bed and there aren't other desirables, when I say that, other plants around it, when the temperatures are favorable, above 65, let's go after it. You know, if it's Creeping Charlie, you know, a.k.a. common ground ivy, I should say a.k.a. Creeping Charlie, the opposite. But, you know, you can use a selective herbicide, weed-free zone, which will work in the upper 40s. I like to use it in the 50s.
That's what I was thinking of, weed-free zone.
But it's most vulnerable in the spring when it's in bloom, if in fact it's Creeping Charlie. Or in the fall before it starts to kind of shut down and transition into the fall and winter months as it translocates all of its energy into its root system.
Right.
So let's try and identify it first before
okay.
we...
I don't know what Creeping Charlie looks like, but I keep thinking I know I have it in my yard because my yard is huge, but...
It's low growing.
It's green all winter. It looks like it just keeps developing all winter long.
Yeah, it can stay green. It's low growing. It has kind of a scalloped shape leaf, and you know the bloom is a telltale sign. You know, the little blue bloom that it's definitely that.
And but, it might. I just try to get it out before it blooms.
Right. It can be tough to eradicate. But anyway, Jane, give us a photo of it if you can. Stop out with a piece of it at the garden center, and we can certainly prescribe something that will help you get rid of it.
I sure will. Do you have your pansies in?
Not yet. We probably won't see those until we get into the beginning of March.
Okay.
Somewhere, you know, all weather related.
I want some color in my yard.
We all do. We'll color up before long. Jane, pleasure to talk with you. Have a great weekend.
Great to hear from you, Jane.
Yeah.
I love to hear her.
She loves to garden.
Yeah, she's a gardener.
You
know, and she probably has some azaleas, going back to our plan of the week that we were talking about. But, you know, I want to bring up the colors are outstanding. So you had mentioned Karen. Mm-hmm. Is there any other ones that you really like?
You know, there's something about white for me with azaleas. Delaware Valley White.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hardy, too, as a matter of fact. And I like that deep green foliage color to it. But I think in a shady area, you really want to brighten it up. White pops.
It does.
I kind of lean towards Delaware Valley White.
I think that's a really good one. You know, there's one that I really like that's interesting called Rosebud.
Rosebud.
Because it's a pink.
Yeah.
And it has a different shaped... a flower to it that kind of resembles a small rose as opposed to your traditional azalea. I actually had some of those in the past, some of the shows that we used to do, and that was a really good one, but it was a bright pink. I mean, it was a true pink. Absolutely love that azalea. Very compact, good bloomer.
Hardy?
Very hardy. Now, I still agree with you. I think the Karen is one of the hardiest varieties. Another one that I really like is Stewarton.
Oh, Stewartonian.
Yes, I'm sorry. I said it wrong.
No,
yes.
Stewartonian.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It has that dark foliage, more upright habit, and that stunning brick red color.
It's the brick red that
I like.
It's a very unique color, you know. And the ones Amy had mentioned about down there at the Masters, I think there's a lot of pinks and purples and whites, and they kind of mix things up a little bit, which tends to look nice with your azaleas.
Oh, yeah, when you do them in a sea, a drift, you know, a grouping, a mass planting, they make a statement. They really, really do. Although they give you that bloom period in the spring and that's it, you know, they're evergreen, most of them. You know, there are some deciduous varieties.
I was
going to
bring that up. You know, there's a deciduous one, right?
But before we talk about that deciduous variety, there's one that I think I have on my list that's a low-growing type of azalea, more of a spreader, and beautiful color to it. And it's more of a pinkish crimson color. It's one called Michael Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a foot and a half in height, maybe two max, and might spread out 4 or 5 feet over time. And kind of, you know, it's well-behaved. It's just got that nice compacted look, and it's very nice. Look for that one at your local garden center.
Yeah, I think that one would be worth looking at. And then finally, you know, you got to look at those Xperi azaleas if you want something completely different because they are deciduous. You know, and if you want a unique plant, and I know we're running out of time, but it really is a cool plant. Maybe we can kind of bring that up, you know, maybe at a later show to talk about some of those.
Well, we might be able to touch base on it here in a bit. But one, when you talk about the Xperi varieties, the deciduous varieties that Bob's talking about, Fragrant Star is one from Monrovia, and hence the name Fragrant Star. It's fragrant. I'm telling you right now, and it's a great performer. And it's hardy to zone 5, so it's got the hardiness element to it.
So hang on to that, though, for just a second, because we do have to take another quick break. So, and when we come back, we'll talk about it.
B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House. And thanks, Alex. That's a good old 80s tune right there, if I say so myself. Who wasn't at the time and still today a Journey fan? But we have our good friend Margie from Bushelman Supply on the phone with this. And good morning, Margie. How are you?
Good morning, Tony. I'm fine. How are you?
We're doing wonderful. And yourself, you doing good up there in the Woodlawn area? You guys ramping up for the spring?
Yeah, we're getting ready. If the rain ever quits.
Oh.
Oh, my goodness.
It will eventually, Margie. It's going to get better. I promise.
Did you get a lot of flooding your way the past week?
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, we live on the Little Miami River,
right.
So I had to walk in and out of the woods twice last week.
Oh, you got to cut.
Wow.
You got to take a different route.
Yeah. In the dark, no less. It was wonderful.
Awesome.
At least I didn't fall in the mud. So there is.
That's good.
There is that.
That's good. So. That's for sure. So what's happening up at Bushelman Supply? And also, before we get into that, I just want to thank you again for the wonderful garage door. Not that you gave it to me by any means, but we are so pleased with it. And just having the new Raynor garage door, it's made a huge difference in the garage.
Can you tell a difference?
Can I tell a difference? Yeah, it's night and day.
Oh,
and it's quieter, all that good stuff. And Tina and I are very happy with our new garage door.
Thank you. Did you guys get an operator as well?
No, you know, Craig, he's thrifty as thrifty can be. He said,
he is.
Yeah. He said, only get one if you need one.
There you go.
And that's what I like about your staff. You know, they're
honest.
They're honest.
They tell you the truth.
Yeah,
they don't just try to sell you something.
Yeah, I will say. Craig is. If he tells you, you can believe it. I mean, just that way. So
he's my guy when it comes to garage doors.
Isn't the winter really hard on garage doors, all these temperatures up and down? Doesn't that really kind of play some havoc on the door?
When it gets really cold, because that's that cold snap.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for one thing, it's bad on the batteries. That's, you know, for your transmitters and stuff. But that cold snap, that's really hard on the springs, that sudden change in temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes those wires just pop.
Yeah. Have you ever had one pop, Tony? Have you ever heard one pop when you're in the garage?
Have I had a spring just pop? Have I ever heard one pop?
Yeah, it's crazy. It is scary to death.
Yeah, it sounds like a gun going off.
It does. The first time I heard mine was terrible. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what was that? You know, it made me jump. That's
the
for sure.
Beverly Hillbillies outside.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I mean, lots of customers will call. You can, when they break, you can even hear them from inside the house.
Yeah.
Because they'll call and say, I don't know what happened. There was just this loud pop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then we know. So.
Yeah. You know, what I did do, Margie, I want to ask you your take on this. When we got down to some of those temperatures where we were like near zero, a little bit below.
Yeah.
Before I opened the garage door, I would just kind of move the bottom so it wasn't stuck to the bottom because of the moisture. Is that a good idea?
Yes, it is, because the bottom section, the astragal, can actually freeze to the ground. And depending on some other factors. I mean, yeah, if you try to open it, you can actually pull things apart. It depends on how hard it's frozen.
Right. Okay. Hey, I did that a couple times just to make sure. Yeah. I didn't.
It does help.
Good. Good. So are you guys ramping up for with hardscaping and all that good stuff and some of aggregates? What's going on up there?
Well, we finished some new bins last year, and we put in some new decorative gravel. It's called Malin Black, but we're going to bring in two more this year. We're going to bring in the Pennsylvania Red, and we're also going to bring in another one that's called Ivory. And those should be here probably in the next month. We just ordered 5 truckloads of pavestone product, so that's coming in a load a week. So we're putting all that away. And we're not going to be down at the Home and Garden Show, but Keystone Hardscape, which is pavestone's commercial division, they're going to be down there, and they are going to be giving away the patio again this year. Fire pit.
Yeah.
This year, I think instead of doing the install, I think we're just going to provide free delivery. So we'll have sign up cards down there, and then we'll have sign up stuff on our Facebook page and website. I think both. So
you just hit on something I wanted to ask you about. The last time you were in the studio with us, I wrote a little note here. You had a new aggregate that was kind of like, you know, the black color, like the Mexican beach pebbles, but at a better price. And that was the Malin Black, right?
Right. That's correct. It's when you say it's like the beach pebbles, it is in the fact that it's black
with the color.
The beach pebbles are round
and
pebbles,
smooth,
and
right.
The Malin Black is a chip. It's a crushed material.
Is it more like the black slate chips that we used to buy, something like that?
Well, we still have the black slate chips, but the black slate chips are more like a shale piece. They're thin and kind of flat, and when they're dry, they're more like a charcoal gray. This Malin Black is a chip, so it's more like a chunk, but it's got like white veining through it, and it sparkles. It's almost, I would say, it's almost like a granite, but it's been a product that customers have asked for a while, and so we brought it in last year, and it's working out real well. The slate chips, and don't get me wrong, the slate chips are an old standby, but one thing I don't like about the slate chips, if you're walking on those on a hill, they kind of slide out from under your feet because they're flat, and they kind of slide on top of each other.
Got it.
Where the chunks kind of bite and they're easier to walk on.
What size are the Malin chips? How big are they?
Let's see. They're probably about 1.25 inches to about 1.5 inches.
Oh, so they probably cover very well too.
Yeah. Most of the material, there's a few that are different, but most of the aggregates will cover about 100 to 120 square feet. At about a 2-inch bed depth. So if we have a bigger one like that Eau Claire, which is more like the size of large eggs and goose eggs, that one, it's hard to get it like a thin 2-inch layer because the pieces are bigger than that. So on that one, anytime you're using a bigger aggregate, your coverage goes down because you want to get total ground cover.
Right.
So,
I make the switch? I'm thinking about an aggregate out in the front of the house versus just the cypress mulch.
We have been using a lot of it, and I think with what Margie has and all the variety, you can really, really separate yourself from some of the other landscapes because it's not just gravel anymore. I mean, aggregates, there is so much to choose from. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, there really is.
And they're pretty. They're really pretty. So the Malin Black, I just did do a little quick look up. It is a really pretty stone. It is really nice. I would definitely recommend that for homeowners to think about using it.
Well, the other thing that's nice about aggregates is, and I'm having this issue in my own yard. You know, I just did all that, Tony, in the
right.
front, did all the boulders and this and that. Well, and you know, we did a lot of plantings, and we put mulch in. But the gosh darn yard is so steep. A lot of my mulch is down at the edge of the driveway now, and I don't know what to do. And I mean, we put it thin because I think sometimes when you put it thick, that makes it worse.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe I'll try putting it thick this year. But I've got so much stone out there, I don't know if I want to go with more stone because I don't
want to you don't want to be stone. Right. Yeah. There's a trade-off there, exactly. You know, with some of the rain and the rains that we've had, how do you keep mulch from moving like that? And you do have a substantial hill.
It's pretty steep.
Right. So, it gets tough.
And, I mean, we graded off for the patio and stuff, but it's still, I mean, it's still steep, especially right there in that one spot. But the other thing that's nice about the gravel is it's easy to spot a weed. And if you put your pre-emergent down, like now, this time of year, maybe up and through the middle of March, it'll work itself down through that gravel, and it'll still work.
Right.
I'm a big believer in pre-emergent.
No, good point there. Good point there, too. Yeah. Margie, hang on with us for one moment. We got to take a quick break, and I got a couple more things I want to ask you real quick before we conclude our little conversation here. And so hang on there for just a second. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. Give us a call if you have any questions. And we're going to continue our conversation with Margie when we come back.
Now, this is your music.
My dad loves Johnny Cash. He's a Johnny Cash fan if I've ever seen one.
Is he?
Oh, my gosh.
His favorite, Ring of Fire?
Ring of Fire.
My wife can sing Ring of Fire. She actually can. It's
really?
Funny. Yeah, I'll get her to sing it
sometime
for you.
Next time we're out?
Yeah, ask her to sing it.
I'll ask her to do just that.
Yes.
And we're going to get back with Margie from Bushelman Supply up there in the Woodlawn area. Before we went into the break, we were talking about aggregates and so forth. And I want to continue our discussion with that. And Margie, you still with us?
Yep, I'm still
All
here.
Right. You know, I want to ask you as well, I think last year was something new for you folks. And that was the manufactured sea glass. Is that still in play? The fire glass?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. Is that still kind of in favor?
It takes fits and starts.
Uh-huh.
It really is pretty, though. And what they do, which is kind of interesting, they start with tempered glass. And so that's why it can withstand the higher heat. But the sea glass, tumbled glass, is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Because that typically is what they gather up, like, a lot of times you'll see it along the edge of the beach and stuff, where it's glass, like glass bottles, and it's been rolled and stuff. So the edges are more rounded.
Right.
But but the fire glass is like chunks. You know how tempered glass breaks. It breaks up into chunks.
Right.
But we have some that's reflective. The blues are always very popular. We probably have, I would say, 8 colors, maybe mm-hmm. plus or minus. But so we've got a lot of the shades of blue. We've got, I think, a gray one. We've got an amber one. I think we have black. I think we have one that's kind of like a mixture, like greens and blues together.
And what
but
do
they
people?
They really are.
Yeah. And what do a lot of people do with those?
Well,
what
I was just going to say, honestly, we sell more of it, I think, to crafty type people than we do for the fire pits.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of the people that buy the fire glass have like gas units.
Yeah, the gas pits.
Yeah.
Right.
And of course, everything that we've got is not, I mean, we have the regular fire rings and the fire pits, and you can make them into gas, but you have to buy like one of those burner things and then have a way to hook up like propane or natural gas or whatever.
Right.
You know, and one thing that people who are listening can go to Bushelman Supply's website, bushelman.com, and Margie, you have a great website because it shows everything that they have and all their different products. So definitely hit their website, bushelman.com. And I mean, I've just punched it up while we were talking real quick, and you can spot the sea glass right under miscellaneous, and it shows you all the colors, but it shows you everything you guys have. And I think people don't realize how much Margie has variety.
There's inventory.
I don't know if there's anybody that has a bigger selection than Margie when it comes to this stuff.
Nope.
Inventory.
If you can't find it up there, I don't know where else to tell you to go.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Margie, give us your phone number there at Bushelman Supply before we let you go this morning.
It's 771-9121.
All right. And your website again?
It's just bushelman.com.
Perfect. All right. Well, always a pleasure to talk with you, and we look forward to having you the next time you're in the studio. And Hang in there with us because we have Dr. Amy Haney. You'll want to listen to our conversation about the influenza virus that's kind of working its way here into the tri-state. And we're also going to sample some chicken noodle soups from various vendors in the Cincinnati area. So I just think of you, Margie, because you're always bringing us in treats, and we always have treats in the studio. And Amy, when we come back out of the break, we're going to talk about the flu virus and also chicken noodle soup, because it always makes us feel a lot better, especially when we're aching and we're congested and we're feverish and we just don't feel good. Nothing makes you feel better than chicken noodle soup. And I have to give a big thanks to those who participated with us. That's Panera Bread, Chick-fil-A, Izzy's, and Bob Evans. And we'll get to that when we come back out of the break. 749-B105, in and around the house. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And sitting alongside me this morning are a couple people. One is Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. And also is our good friend, Dr. Amy Haney, a physician at St. Elizabeth. And we invited Amy to come in and talk about influenza, the flu. And this time last year, I know that I had something. I wasn't sure. But boy, I had a cough that I missed so much. I couldn't get rid of it. And I've been lucky thus far. And I have to ask you, Dr. Haney, were we on mark this year with the flu virus shot, the vaccination, or were we on par? Did we guess the right flu?
I think we're better this year. Yeah, the vaccine's better than last year. Last year it was hit about 40%, they say. So
is that 40% a good or bad?
40% that it wasn't that great last year because there was a strain that came in. So this year is about 50%. I think the strain's not as virulent as it was last year either. Mm-hmm. So it's still bad. And anybody who's got a house full of sick people, they know it's bad. But the vaccine did definitely help better this year.
How tough is that to guess what virus might be? Afflict most of us in any given season? Is that really a difficult task to do?
They have to predict it a whole year in advance. So they got to pick the top four strains out of like 100 strains, which ones they think is going to hit a year in advance, and then try to get a vaccine together in time for everybody to get it. You know, we have a free country. We have open, you know, people can come and go. You can get strains from anywhere in the world, come in at the last second, and it won't be in that vaccine. So it's really hard. There's a lot of variables there.
Well, that's why I like for you to travel with me. When I'm on an airplane, the germ tube, you know, it's very important that I don't get sick, and I'm glad the radio station hired you to travel with me. I'm just kidding.
Glad to help.
But, that's what I worry about most. You know, if I am traveling, and most people, you know, there are a lot of people that get off and on to those airplanes. And
from all over.
Yes. And it's I always find it, you feel a little funny sometimes during the winter months that when you're traveling like that, do a lot of people get sick that way?
Absolutely. I see them all the time when they come home from a trip. I'm like, did you fly or did you drive? I flew. I'm like, well, there's where you caught it.
There's where you caught it.
Sharing amongst everybody for hours.
Yes. Mm.
And are you a germaphobe, Tony?
No, not really, but what I've been trying to do is make it more of a practice to wash my hands a little bit more frequently and use some of the sanitizers. And more for this reason only is because, like, later in the day, you know, I wear contacts. And, you know, that's just getting around your eyes, your nose, your mouth, things like that. That's where the germs, do they typically enter that way, Amy?
Yep.
And, it's so I'm not a germophobia, but during this time of year.
You seem like a germaphobe.
Do I? Okay,
yes, you
do. Thanks.
I got to be straight with you. You know me. I'm going to call it out.
Okay, that's fine. I'm okay with that. But I don't see any wood around, but I want to knock on wood. Thus far this season, I've been okay, and I hope it stays like that. But I find for me, the flu vaccine, the shot helps me a lot with colds. Not always, but for the most part, you know, I'll inevitably develop some sort of a chest cold. And Dr. Haney, tell us, is that part of the influenza? Is it always like upper respiratory kind of
infliction? Yes, you know, a lot of people will say that I had the stomach flu. Well, that's not influenza. That's another virus. And there's a lot of viruses going around right now. So, but the true influenza is a respiratory virus. You get a fever with it, achy, like your eyelids hurt. Everything hurts.
shoulders ache,
everything.
All that good stuff.
Yeah. So, and it's, you know, 10 to 14 days. It's a long virus, too. So it's not like you're going to get over it in 2 days.
Yeah, common cold you're going to get over in a couple of days or longer. But, you know, typically you're over. But the flu is going to be a while. Yeah,
I don't get over a cold in a couple of days. It's with me for, like, weeks. I'll have this hack, this cough.
You're not 50 anymore, Tony.
No, I'm not. I'm north of 50. Yeah, you're right. I'm getting older. So this is for the elderly. Is that what you're saying?
I didn't say that. Don't put words in my mouth. I don't want to get phone calls.
No.
People calling the station saying Bob's bashing
older
people. It's not happening. It's just bashing you.
But Bob, you yourself, you do not
I never get the flu shot. I never get the flu
Why?
Shot. I just don't. I don't. I never do. I have a hard time believing in and giving myself a vaccination of injecting myself with the flu to prevent the flu.
Well, it's a dead virus, which is
it's a dead virus.
And Dr. Haney, tell us about that. When I hear people say, yeah, I got the flu shot and then I got the flu right after. Can that happen?
It's not really the flu that they're really describing usually. It's usually your immune system responding to the vaccine is what it typically is. So, like, down and dirty, immunology 101 on the flu vaccine. Let me give it to you.
Bob. Yeah, good.
This is the down and dirty one.
Yes.
She's looking at you and moving her hands.
I know. I got the finger pointed right at me. I'm like, geez, oh, please, wait a minute.
So, your body's immune system is like a hard drive. Just think of it like a hard drive. So, anything that your body comes in contact with, viruses, bacteria, whatever, your body's hard drive, immunology, like the defense system, they like good, bad, they pick it out, good, bad, this is bad, this is good. So anything bad, they recognize it the next time they see it.
Right.
So flu vaccines, you get a vaccine, it's presented to that hard drive and say, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. And just a tiny little fraction of what the whole flu virus would do.
Right.
So just enough so that your hard drive knows, recognizes it if they see it. So that's what your immune system does.
It's like McAfee or Norton Commander for your hard drive, Bob.
Exactly.
Keep the virus out.
I don't go into websites that I need to get all that protection from.
So, now, Dr. Haney, what do you have to say about that? He's not hanging around people who are infected.
He's just been lucky.
He's just been lucky.
I'm out with the general public all the time. I have my kids in school, college, and high school. You know, I do go to the gym 6 days a week. There's a lot of germs there. You know, I think, honestly, maybe I'm wrong. My body still can handle some basic colds and fight them off a little easier than maybe others who aren't exposed to that stuff.
Well, I mean, everybody's immune system is a little bit different. But,
right.
You know, healthy people get the flu.
They do.
Healthy people get the flu all the time. Yeah, I mean.
And I'm not telling people not to get one. That's not why I do it. And I'm not out promoting something. It's just something I don't do. I never have. And
I definitely recommend the flu vaccine.
So,
I definitely recommend it.
And you always get yours, right, Tony? Always.
Well, think about it. Think about your hard drive. If you get the flu shot every year, look at all the strains over 20 or 30 years that your body recognizes. So, you know, if there's a slight variation on
so it, if
you're
going
to recognize
it. So if you get a shot of this year's vaccination and next year is different, does this year still help prevent
for
years to come?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It stays in that hard drive.
All right.
See, there you go. Unless you destroy it or becomes infected or
change your hard drive.
You get a new hard drive. Yeah, there you go. I like that analogy. Right. It works. It's McAfee at its best or Norton Commander
right.
virus.
It is.
So who really is at risk the most for the flu that should, if somebody who's being stubborn like me doesn't get it, but who's really at risk and should get the flu shot?
Anybody who has any chronic illness, you know, heart disease, diabetes, COPD, all of that, any cancers, of course, pregnant women.
Yes.
Pregnant women are high risk. And young, the babies. Mm-hmm. The babies, because babies under 6 months old, they can't get a flu vaccine.
Okay. So they have to be 6 months or older before that happens.
Right. And so, like, if you're going to be around any of that group, then I also recommend that you get the flu shot so you don't give it to them.
Right.
Right. So. You know, Bob, you had asked Dr. Haney something I found very interesting, and I did not know this. If you bring up the...
I'd heard in the past that when you do your flu shot, you should always ask for an individual vial so that they draw from that, because some of the big jugs that they have all the flu shot in is got mercury to preserve it. So you don't want to, you know, they're drawing mercury out and you're putting more into your system, which I think is really bad for you. Is that something they still do?
They don't do that anymore. We have no big jugs in our office.
Didn't they used to have like a large... area that you would draw from? Or was it always small vials?
If that happened, it was way when I was in training. I mean, ever since I've been around, we have, you know, little vials. So, but it's been mercury-free for a while. It's a dead vaccine. It's made in test tubes now. They used to make it with eggs, and they don't do that anymore. So it's come
a really changed.
Yeah, it's come a long way.
Well, hold on to that thought, because I kind of want to get some information from you, Dr. Haney. In the office, what are you seeing at this point in time where we are in the course of the year? And I also want to add to it, you know, it was just a school system over there in Roselawn that a lot of students were home with something like the flu illness, you know, symptoms of the sort. And I want to know what you're seeing on a daily basis. Keep that thought in mind. If you have any questions for Dr. Haney, or you're having some issues with the flu, or you want to chime in, certainly feel free to do so and give us a call at 749-B105 in and around the house. And we'll continue our conversation about flu when we come back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we have our good friend, Dr. Amy Haney from the St. Elizabeth's Physicians Group in with us. We're talking about influenza, the flu. And before we went into the break, I told Dr. Haney, or I'd asked her, I wanted to find out what's going on in the office. What are you seeing at this point in time?
We have a lot of stuff going on in our office right now.
A lot of stuff.
A lot. I have people just walking in sick, begging to be seen right now because there's so many people in their family sick. We got the flu, of course, and that's just on its way up. We haven't peaked yet on the flu. So we tripled our amount of cases this week that we saw from last week. So I expect the next couple weeks to be busy. We got some other viruses, other respiratory viruses going around too. There is a stomach virus that's going around, too.
Wow.
It's really bad. My husband thinks I should go through a hazmat tent on the before I come in the house.
I could hear Rob. Yeah. Need to go through washdown.
Yeah, that yellow tent. Yeah. That's what he thinks I ought to have.
Like he's not around the public either.
I know.
Well, how long are you contagious once the flu starts, finish? How long are you actually contagious?
You are contagious as long as you got a fever. So it's usually about a week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you know, you're off work.
Yeah.
You can't, you have to quarantine yourself. I say, you're not going to work. You shouldn't go to school till you break your fever.
So
please do that too. Please stay home. Rest. No, you don't want to infect everybody at your workplace or at school.
No, there's nothing worse. No, I agree with you. You know, so you got the flu. All right. So what are some of the things that people can do to kind of, yeah, lessen the effects of the flu, make it, you know, not as difficult to get through. Are there any remedies, anything over the counter that they can do? Is it always necessary that they come and see a physician? What are your recommendations?
Well, you know, like I was talking about the high risk populations for sure. They ought to get checked early because we have an antiviral medicine that really lessens the course and shortens it, makes it not as severe, and it's really important for those populations. Or, you know, for anybody, really. I mean, if, you know, somebody who's working, like, they can't be off work 2 weeks. You get in there early if you can, if you'd like to try this antiviral medicine, or get checked. And then we always look for complications from the flu, like pneumonia. So if you feel like you're not getting better, you ought to get checked, too. But, you know, say Bob, who didn't get the flu shot, he gets the flu, which he might get the flu because he didn't get the flu shot.
I'm knocking on wood.
Yeah, well, there isn't any wood around.
But he doesn't have any medical issues. He's pretty, you know, he's going to probably feel lousy. Probably doesn't believe in any medicine for it, or he doesn't want to get checked.
I don't take a lot of medicines.
Yeah, so he's going to want to do his home remedies, which is fine. You know, it's rest. It's fluids. You know. Yes. Chicken soup like we got today.
Which we're going to talk about, too. Why is it that chicken soup makes us feel better? So we're going to talk about that, too, just shortly. But go ahead. I didn't mean to
No, go ahead. Fever control.
Right.
And but staying hydrated is the big thing.
That's the key.
That is key because that helps your immune system work. They need water to work. So
I wish I'd get my dad to drink more water. I tell him that all the time.
Old people do not drink water. No. They lose that thirst mechanism for some reason, and it's really hard to get
them. Sometimes in the cold, in the wintertime, people won't drink as much water. No. They're not as hot, so they just don't hydrate. It's surprising how many people don't hydrate year-round.
It is.
Now, I go to the gym all the time, so I'm constantly drinking. Probably, I drink a lot of fluids, but I feel better. I've noticed that I feel better when I'm hydrated. My body performs better.
Yeah, or 75% water.
Exactly. So I think that's one thing that really could help everybody is just drinking. Same thing with our plants. We always talk about our plants need water and how they need to be hydrated.
And their hard drive. They need to take care of their hard drive.
They need to take care of their hard drive with fertilization and, you know, being healthy. But, you know, it is key to be hydrated. I think that is a huge key, especially in the wintertime.
Right. And when you have a fever, you get dehydrated because you... You have chills, you have sweats with it, so then you get more dehydrated, too.
You know, I think this is kind of funny or comical. My dad, he would always have this little package of Airborne. Do they still make that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I think he was a firm believer in it. Like, oh, I'm going to take this Airborne. I just want to keep this from coming on me. Does that really work, or is that just kind of...
It won't hurt you, but there's really no studies that...
Okay. I didn't know if it was like snake oil or, I would just crack up. He had that little cylinder tube with the Airborne tablets in it, and he'd get one out, and I would just kind of, you know, I'd turn away and walk away and kind of laugh. You know, he really put some faith into it. Yeah, now, if he's listening this morning, he's going to let me know.
He's going
to
let you know.
Why did you have to say that?
Why'd you throw me under the bus?
Yeah, I didn't take out Airborne.
Everybody that listens knows that you try to throw me under the bus.
No,
you're going to throw your dad under the bus.
No,
you've thrown Alex under the bus. You know, we know how you are. We know how you
except for Dr. Haney, because I need her to travel with me.
Well, she's getting on me, so you're golden right now.
Gotcha. But what about vitamin C? How important is vitamin C?
I mean, it doesn't hurt you again, but again, there's no really controlled studies on that one either. There's a lot of these things that they have over the counter. There's really not any proven benefit, like FDA approved benefit. But does it hurt you? It doesn't hurt you to try it. You know, I think it's more of getting good nutrition in. Like it's you know, like if you really want to stave off getting sick. Take care of yourself. Eat well. Hydrate again. Exercise. You know, stay healthy, and then you don't get sick so much.
She's exactly right, and it just brings me back to plants. You know, what do we always talk about? A healthy plant is a better plant. You know, it grows better, doesn't have as many issues with bugs or insects or diseases.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Right.
They're living,
being healthy
things, being healthy, and I think that has everything to do. Doesn't mean you're not going to get the flu, but I think if you are healthy, it's going to help you prevent. And lessen.
Just the complications, yeah.
All right. You're in your chair. You have the sniffles. You're aching, all that good stuff. Is there anything wrong with a hot toddy?
Nothing wrong with it.
Huh? Is there
a benefit?
Any benefit to the old hot toddy?
Well, that's what I always got when I was a kid. My dad gave me a hot toddy and sent me to bed. And that's what he used to do. Actually, there is. I mean, it's got vitamin C. It's got the lemon. It's got the honey.
Mm-hmm.
Honey coats your vocal cords, so it helps the cough.
Got it.
And I guess the whiskey just opens up your airways.
Nothing wrong with a little bourbon.
So, yeah.
Mm. It'll get you going.
You can also use hot tea.
Okay.
Too, but it's not as much fun. But, you know.
Maybe Old Forester, Bullet, something like that. No, I was just curious. Does that really help?
Sometimes that's the only thing that'll cut the cough.
What's the purpose of the lemon?
I think it helps with the vitamin C again.
Okay, the vitamin C. Okay.
Yeah. But I think it cuts through the congestion.
Yeah, I think it helps the throat.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when it's raw, at least it'll help me. Mm-hmm. It'll kind of soothe that.
Well, you never get sick.
Well, you know, I'll take a lozenger here and there if I need to.
I'm getting confused.
I didn't say I don't get sick. I just, you know, but sometimes a lozenger or something like that with a little honey in it will really actually
like a
just help.
Like a Ricola. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, that's your favorite commercial, isn't it?
Not my favorite commercial.
But, you know, I just was wondering about, do some of those things really kind of help us get through the, you know, that part of the flu element and so forth, when you just ache and you're feverish and all that good stuff.
Well, the chicken soup thing.
The chicken soup. Now, that's another thing. And
now, there is some studies on that. There are some studies
there
on that.
There are some studies on the chicken noodle soup.
Yes,
and how benefited it is. I mean, how beneficial it is, right?
It boosts your immune system.
Well, hold on to that thought, because let's take a quick break. And what we're talking about is, you know, chicken noodle soup has that ability. When we're kind of achish and feverish and just, you know, just all congested, nothing better than a hot bowl of chicken noodle soup. Why is that? And I just also want to point this out. Our good friends from Panera Bread donated some of their chicken soup, Chick-fil-A. Thank you, Pam Gilchrist. And we're going to check that out. Izzy's here locally. They also supplied some chicken noodle soup, as well as Bob Evans. And we're going to give you our spin on it. And then when we come back out, before we do that, Dr. Amy Haney is going to tell us why chicken noodle soup makes us feel better if we have the flu. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House. We're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Amy Haney. She's with the St. Elizabeth Physicians Group, and we've just been spending some time talking about the flu season that it's upon us, as a matter of fact. And I know a lot of us heard just recently in the news that one of the schools over in the Cincinnati area, that a third, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that some of the students were home with flu-like symptoms, and it's here. And we're going to continue our discussion about why is it that chicken noodle soup makes us feel better. Are there any studies behind this, Dr. Haney?
There are. There are some studies. And actually, you know, they did check to see really, really does it help, but it does boost your immune system. Now, it does other things too, of course. It's soup, so it's hot, it's brothy.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll break that congestion, helps a sore throat, you know. Easy on your stomach. So when you have a fever, you don't feel like eating too much. So.
Plus, you're getting fluids.
And you're getting fluids. And then all that good brothy stuff. You know, it's got all those herbs in it that help you. And all that stuff boosts your immune system. And I think that's what they found in the study.
Interesting. So. Now, you know, oddly enough, when I make homemade chicken noodle soup, I put a lot of dill in it. I like dill.
Really?
In my chicken. Yeah. Now, you can try it. I just do. And, I'm weird, I guess. But I do like herbs like that in my chicken noodle soup.
I don't put dill, but...
No?
Yeah.
I've done parsley, you know, various things like that.
Parsley, thyme. Yeah.
So we've sampled a number of different chicken noodle soups here this morning. And again, we sampled one from Panera Bread, Chick-fil-A, Izzy's, and Bob Evans.
They were all good.
They were all good.
They're all delicious.
They are.
They're all a little different.
They're different.
Yeah, they are.
What did you notice that was different about... Let's start with Izzy's.
Izzy's was brothy, and it had a lot of herbs
present.
Yeah, it had a lot of herbs in it. Mm-hmm.
You could taste the herbs.
So it was really good.
Love the noodles. The noodles were great.
Yeah, you know, they also had the bow tie noodles in there. Mm-hmm. Pasta.
Yeah, they had a little
I should
mix.
Say it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
a no, it's not really a noodle. It's a pasta.
Exactly, but it was really good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was a different flair. More of an herb presence in it. I like the broth. I agree with you. You know, and those of you at home, if you have a favorite chicken noodle soup from any of those who have helped us this morning and were so kind to donate for us to just talk about it a little bit, let us know. Give us your flair or somebody else that has a chicken noodle soup or what your recipe is. But I always feel good and comfortable and at home when I have chicken noodle soup and I'm not feeling well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody remembers your mom's chicken noodle soup when you're sick. I mean, that cures everything.
Absolutely. So. Anything about Izzy's? You want to go on to, let's talk about the
I like the broth. Izzy's was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Really, okay. Really good. I would highly recommend it.
I liked it. I really did. I liked the herb element to it.
Mm-hmm.
What about Bob Evans? It was a little bit more, the noodles are a lot thicker.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed there was bigger chunks of chicken in it, but not as brothy.
Mm-hmm.
Still a good taste.
Very good. Those homemade noodles were really good. So
one of my son's favorite. He loves
the Bob Evans.
No, my son absolutely loves the Bob Evans. So, and you know, he likes it for a dinner. So, because it's got more in it, so he likes it for a dinner.
Yeah, it's just hearty from the standpoint. There's less broth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it tastes good. I like it.
It does taste good too. Yeah.
Panera. Let's go with Panera.
Panera is a little brothier too. I liked it. It was brothier too. It has a. I don't know what the taste is in it. It's another type of herby broth too. It's different than Izzy's though.
I noticed
it's definitely different.
A little bit more celery in it. It looks like to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there's a different element into it. It's good too.
It's very good. It's very good.
And by the way, Tony was just getting a mouthful of each one of these.
As
he picks one, he just grabs a big spoon and gets like as much as he can get. And you know, in a few seconds while we're talking, he's just down in his soup.
No, we've got all these spoons soups sitting around.
He's got like 20 soups over there.
What about the one from Chick-fil-A? I like that one. If I were to leave today and say, hey, I'm going to pick up some chicken noodle soup before I go home, I like the brothiness of it, the texture. It's a little more creamy than the others.
It's a little creamier than the other ones, for sure. Yeah.
It
has a different broth.
So yes.
So you that's where you would go first?
I think so. I like all four. Don't get me wrong.
I love all four, but I would probably go to Izzy's first.
You would go to Izzy's for mm-hmm. what is it?
I love the broth and I love the pasta and I think it has great flavor. They're all really good, but that's where if I was going, I'd go to Izzy's first.
I like the creaminess in the broth. texture in the
Chick-fil-A. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good too. It's really good. They're all a little different, which is what
they're
all different. It's amazing how different they are.
Like my son would definitely say, "Let's go to Bob Evans." I mean, he would absolutely. And you know, I think what was funny is we had four different ones, and we kind of had four different opinions.
Mm-hmm. I know, we have no consensus here.
We don't really have a consensus. We all kind of like a different one, which is really kind of interesting. But you know, we'll have to have our listeners go and try it for themselves, sample, and let us know.
Yeah, no, it's and it's an easy way if you don't feel up to it. Making chicken noodle soup at home when you're feeling kind of under the weather, have a friend stop by. You know, they always, someone always says, if there's anything I can do, let me know. Absolutely. I want you to stop by Chick-fil-A or Izzy's or wherever and bring me some chicken noodle soup. Oh, it's going to be a while. Yeah. But
if I have the flu, you guys have to bring me some soup so I feel better. Since
you have the flu, I'm going to tell you I told you so.
I'm sure. I'll get that from a lot of people.
All right. Well, Dr. Haney, thank you for all the information that you have shared with us and the folks at St. Elizabeth's Physicians Group, and tell Dr. John Castaneda I said hello. I don't think he can come in here and do what you did today. He'll like that. I'm sure I'll hear from him.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, and thank you. And if you're not in a hurry, I brought an extra bag if you want to go over to Finley.
Oh,
your ears perked up. All right. And always a fun time at Finley Market. But Dr. Haney, thank you. Really had it was fun this morning, and thanks for coming in to warm up the soups. And a big thank you again to Panera Bread, Chick-fil-A, Izzy's, and Bob Evans for sharing with us your chicken noodle soup, because it definitely makes you feel good when you're under the weather. And when we come back out of the break, Bob and I also have on our list of things to discuss this morning is the black walnut tree. We're going to talk a little bit more gardening before we conclude our show this morning, because Bob visited with a client the other day.
I did.
And that might be a potential issue. 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And alongside me is my good friend Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. And that was a fun segment right there. And it, you know, you might say, hey, what does that have to do with gardening? Well, if you garden and you like to cook with herbs and you're growing herbs, you can make your own soups and all that other good stuff. But hey, we're all afflicted with, you know, some illnesses during the winter months, the flu, and it just happens. But it's an appropriate, I think it's a good subject to talk about.
It's out there, but I like the relativity of the fact that, you know, you have to take care of your body. Like we talk about, take care of plants. And that's kind of was my spin on it, on how it kind of fits in here. And also, you know, planting and gardening makes you feel good. You know, so you already feel better when you're starting to think about plants and you're starting to do things. So I think when it's kind of dreary and drab, and I know the sun's trying to peek through some of the clouds here and there, but it's pretty cloudy. But I think as you feel better, I think that just helps your body. Naturally. I know it sounds funny, but I really think it helps.
And then you're feeling better and you're energetic and you can garden to town.
Right. So, you know, I mean, we're all, you know, we want to bring up good information. We want to help everybody. You know, we want to educate people as much as possible. You know, that's what the show does. But, you know, sometimes you got to step out of the box just a little.
This time of year, you know, there's not a lot we can do outside. So, yeah. Anyway, before we went into the break, I had a customer who was in a store the other day, and she was asking me about some ideas and various things about doing some plantings, and she has a black walnut tree, which some things don't do very well underneath the black walnut tree.
A lot of things. And, you know, with your black walnut, you know, there's just the tree itself, every part of the tree causes a little toxicity in the soil.
You know, it's
bark. The roots, you know, the leaves as things fall, you know, there's every part of that tree can cause some toxicity underneath it, and it really poisons the soil enough to where a lot of plants will not grow.
You know, in particular, more vegetables than anything are affected by the black walnut tree. And it's amazing, you know, there's a substance from the black walnut tree, and it's all parts of it. It's leaves that, you know, if you were using it as mulch, its root system, the hulls from the black walnuts themselves, they all contain a product called juglone. And that product is toxic to some of our plants. Not all, but some. And the other day I had a customer that was in a store, and she has just that issue. So not only is there an issue with what might do well underneath that tree, there's also an issue with this tree because it's quite large. And because of the large size of the tree, you don't get a lot of sunlight in.
Well, and I stopped up to see it.
And you stopped up there to see her.
And her backyard, pretty much where we need to landscape, is covered by this walnut.
Yeah.
And it's going to make things a little more difficult. So the grass is like 30, 40% good. Because even the grass is struggling to grow underneath it. Because of the shade is a big part of it.
But,
you know. So she was asking me, you know, some ideas of what we could do. And she's pretty creative. She actually came up with some ideas herself about taking some stepping stones and taking pathways through different areas. I think that was a great idea, you know, and so we need to talk to Margie and get some stone from that. I also thought she has an area where a driveway drains through it. So we do know that some of those toxinities can move a little bit as well. So I want to try to control the moisture, and I'm going to add a dry creek kind of in this area so I can take the moisture that's coming down the driveway from all the rain and kind of steer it so it doesn't spread over the whole area.
Right.
The other thing I think that's highly recommended is if we can mound the soil a little bit, you know, to put some new soil in there for some of the smaller, shallow-rooted perennials. But the key is she's going to have to rake leaves and get anything falling that's fallen off that tree removed from the soil quickly, and that'll lower the toxinity in the soil as well. But there are some plants that, and the key word here is tolerant. Not 100% foolproof, but tolerant to the toxinity that's created by the black walnut.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. When you start thinking about that, and you're immediately thinking, wow, what will work and what won't work? And, you know, in that particular situation for me, I know that hostas do relatively well, especially since we have a shady situation.
Right.
For the most part, you know, they'll do well underneath a black walnut tree. Astilbe, I understand, will. Some of the heucheras will.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things. And I always have to typically go back, and I will reference a list from one of the universities or botanical websites.
Right.
Because I don't remember everything that will do well or everything that will not do well underneath a black walnut tree. And, you know, unless you've really experienced it, it's one thing. But for the most part, it's a lot of it, like I said, has to do with the vegetables and so forth, like your tomato plants, your bell pepper plants, cabbage, various things like that. Keep in mind, you know, those toxins, the juglone, can go out as far as 80 feet away from the base of that tree.
Yeah, that's a long way.
That's a long, long way. And, you know, even if you're growing in raised beds or containers, that would be one of your best bets. But make sure you keep those beds clean.
Well,
you could still have, you know, toxins that will work its way into the beds via the leaves of the tree, maybe its root system to a degree, depending upon how deep your beds are, all that good stuff. So there are things you can do when you plant underneath a black walnut tree.
And as you said that, it brought up something else that we really didn't discuss that I'd like to talk about. Do not compost your walnut leaves and debris in your compost pile. So if you have that, try to, if you have room, put that in a separate place where you don't care what the toxinity in the soil. Because as you rake these leaves and you move some of this stuff, you know, there's no reason to put it in your good compost bin that you're going to start to put around all your other plants. There's no reason to do
that. No, you don't want to do it.
Don't mix it. So, but there are some plants, you know, and once again, these are tolerant, not necessarily 100% proof. You know, I know hostas, but there are people that'll call in and say, you said to use this, and it didn't do as well as maybe it did for your neighbor who has a walnut tree. But juniper sometimes, forsythia, the beauty berry bush, nine bark is supposed to be tolerant of that. There are some things out there that you can use. And the Morton Arboretum website is actually a good reference for people who want to look something up. It has a pretty good list of plants.
Yeah, you know, in that situation, Bob, with the shade, you know, you have Jacob's ladder would be a good option. Mm-hmm. You know, liriope also will do relatively decent underneath those conditions. You know,
not every fern, but some ferns. Yeah. Apparently, lady fern is
some
actually
ferns,
okay, but not all ferns.
Right.
That's the tricky part of the whole walnut thing is you can't just say ferns, and say okay, just use ferns. Because not every fern is going to do well with that problem,
right.
with the juglone and the toxinity in the soil.
You know, Here's something else I want to point out, too. If you're not really sure if a plant is doing well in that type of a situation, and what we're talking about is, you know, planting underneath or near black walnut trees, which they are toxic. You know, it's the toxicities, the toxic elements or toxins that work their way into the soil, and it kind of inhibits plants from doing well, performing well, or performing up to their capabilities. And typically you're like, well, what are some of the symptoms? And some of the symptoms that I have seen in the past are like yellowing of foliage, the leaves, like a chlorosis kind of a look. That sometimes can be an indicator. Also like a deformity in the foliage, Bob, as it starts to unfurl or grow, you'll have more of a deformity look in the foliage. That might be an indicator. And usually too, it's when you know a plant can get up to 2 or 3 feet in height, or maybe even spread 2 or 3 feet further out.
Yep.
Stunting. The plant becomes stunted.
Right.
So those are some of the symptoms to look for when it comes to juglone, the toxic toxins that kind of affects some of the plants underneath and around the black walnut tree. But just kind of reference something and or get with some of your folks, the staffs at staff members at some of the local garden centers and nurseries, to help you identify that, because it can be a problem. And it's something that I've never talked about before in the past on a show, but well worth mentioning and bringing up.
Yeah, and I think the key is, if once you identify that you have a black walnut, you know, and you'll probably know, and you, it's pretty fairly easy to spot, but
you'll know.
But there, you're not sub, you know, it used to be you kind of, you were done, you didn't have anything to choose from. Well, with all the research out there and studies, you know, they're finding out that certain plants can't handle that toxicity. And so it's, the key is, just like everything else that you and I talk about on the show, being prepared, being educated. Before you just go buy a plant, know what you're getting. And if it's going to go under a black walnut, you need to find out whether that plant will survive and thrive in that spot. And if it doesn't, move on to something else. But like the design that I'm creating, we're going to use some dry creeks and some stepping stone pathways to really enhance the garden. Maybe add some big boulders, because none of those are going to have a problem with any toxicity, but they're really going to add some interest to the landscaping. And then if we can kind of help control what falls, mm-hmm. and rake mm-hmm. it up and clean it up and get into a little bit better cleaning habits in the fall, especially, right. You know, then we might have a little better success.
Now, this is interesting. Our friend Tom Montz from up at Natorps, mm-hmm. or no, not Natorps, I'm sorry, Burns Garden Center.
Yes.
He just mentioned the black walnut and the emoji, like, oh, that he lost an autumn blaze after 3 years of it being planted by a black walnut tree.
Because it was close to the runoff, I wonder?
You know, I don't know, but actually, you know, some of the things that I've read, you know, red maples, you know, which that's a red maple, mm-hmm. are tolerant and the toxicity. But going back to what you said, I want to reinforce that. Tolerant. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. You know, when we talk about plants that are deer tolerant, doesn't mean they won't eat them.
Right.
So again,
it's on the list.
The toxicity.
He's right. It
right.
says it's on the list. But also, I think a lot of it has to do with how long has the tree been there? How long has it been going on? How bad is the toxicity? How bad is the soil? You know, do you have good habits of raking leaves, removing debris, cleaning things up? There's a lot of things that go into that. And I think it's mm-hmm. just, you know, it's something worth mentioning, worth researching, and, you know, we should definitely talk more about it in later shows.
Got it. All right. That's going to conclude our show for this Saturday, and we'll be back in and around the house next Saturday, and have a great, great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans, because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America, NMLS 407249, Equal Housing Lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.